Good afternoon, everyone. We're going to start this legislative meeting quite abruptly and welcome you all here this beautiful afternoon in Dillingham. For the record, this is the House Energy Committee. We'll convene this meeting to order at approximately 1:33 on the first day of March. And this is an official legislative committee hearing, so we will have protocol that will be involved. First and foremost, when you come forward to testify, we'll ask that you actually speak into the microphone so that your voice can be heard, because all the testimony will be transcribed and become part of the official record in the legislature. We have a number of things to just sort of take care of before we begin the testimony. And for those in the listening audience, and I guess also to remind you in the audience that KDLG is broadcasting this meeting, so it is going out to the KDLG listening audience. And we do have an offline number for individuals who want to testify from House District 37, and we'll be giving that line out periodically. And for the record, that's 1-888-295-4546. We have renewable energy books that are at the entrance for those that want those. We also have sign-in sheets that all of you have been subjected to as you walked in the door. If you've got cell phones, and yes, we do have cell phones out here in the bush, we would ask, just like we do in Juneau, that you keep those turned off or on mute so that we don't have them ringing during the meeting. With that, I'd like first off to have the committee introduce themselves to you here in the audience and also listening on KDLG. And I've got both members in the we're finishing up lunch, so I'm going to see who's done with their food. And we'll start with Representative Ramirez, if you could, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hi, thank you very much for having us to your community. So I'm Representative Jay Ramirez. I'm from District 10, which is in Fairbanks. It's my second trip to Dillingham in the last year and a half or 2 years. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
I'm Representative Paul Gill from North Pole area. Thank you for your hospitality. We're glad to be in your community.
I'm Pete Peterson from East Anchorage, Muldoon area, and I'm on the new committee for energy in the House. And thank you for the great morning we had. It was a great tour of this area.
I represent rural Kenai, so Kenai Peninsula.
I'm Sharice Millett. I represent House District 30. It's a Lower Hillside in Anchorage. Thanks for having us. This has been amazing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Madam Chair. My name is Bob Heron. I represent the Kuskokwim. And I appreciate all the hospitality that that you have shown all of the committee members. And of course, as your guests, you're the most important people in the room now, and I look forward to your comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Kyle Johansson from Ketchikan, in the southern southeast Alaska, and thank you for your hospitality. It's been a pleasure.
And my name is...
Hello.
My name is Chris Tuck. I'm from District 29, the Diamond Business District in South Central Anchorage, and thank you so much for your hospitality and your warm welcome.
A few other things to mention before we get started with the testimony. I'd like to welcome Steve Hagenson, the energy czar, as they call him. He's somewhere here in the audience. Steve, can you raise your hand, please? He's in the very back there, standing up. And we also have John Anderson of Alaska Housing Finance Corporation here. John? Thank you for coming. I'd like to thank Ginger Bames and her helpers for the wonderful lunch. That was very tasty, and we appreciate that. Before we get started as well, I'm going to allow Co-Chair Millett to say a few words, and certainly we have the honor of having the Speaker of the House here and ask him to say a few words too. But just so everyone knows, in terms of time, the meeting is starting a little bit late, but I think we have the luxury of being able to go a little bit past our posted time of 4:15. We're all on the 5:30 Penn Air flight, so we're going to stay here as long as we possibly can. And Penn Air tells me that as long as we're out there at 5, they'll make sure we get on the plane. And so we're going to be here as long as we can. We'll have some of you coming forward representing organizations, and we're going to give you a little bit more time, but we're looking at about 5 or 6 minutes. So we have a large audience here. We're going to be try to be pretty strict with the allotted time. And there'll be some time for maybe some Q&A or some dialogue after you speak if there's questions. And for individuals, we're going to probably cut that in half and give you about 3 minutes. And I know that's not a lot of time, but we're going to do our very best to accommodate everybody here. So with that, Co-Chair Millett, do you want to say a few things?
Sure. First, I'd just like to take a moment and recognize your wife, who's here, and thank you for joining us on our trip, and it's been great having you with us, and thanks for loaning us Bryce on the weekend. And also, we have one more person that I just want to recognize, and that's Bruce Tiedman. He's also here, and you probably all know him. He's been here hundreds of times. But thanks for doing this. This is the second part of our trip. We went to Nome and Kotzebue earlier in the month and held the same kind of hearings in Nome and Kotzebue. And the stories that you're going to tell us, I'm sure, will be just as compelling as those from the North Slope. And we're excited to listen and learn, and that's why we're here as we, Bryce and I and our committee, go forward writing some statewide energy policy. You will be active participants in that. And so we just want you to know you can contact any of our offices at any time with any ideas. And it's just very exciting to be able to travel and to come out here and meet everybody and see what you're doing on innovation and listen to some of the things that we aren't aware of. And, you know, as we make that policy, we need to be aware of it. So thank you for having us and for all the hospitality.
Thank you, Representative Millett. Speaker Chenault, did you want to say a few things?
Thank you, Bryce. And certainly it's good to be in a community that you've never been to before and see the turnout of residents of the area. To certainly voice your concerns, we did go on a little trip this morning down the road a ways and went on a little snow machine jaunt across the lake. And certainly we've had an interesting time mingling with the residents of the area and listening to their concerns, not only about energy but about other issues, health care, and certainly innovative ways of some of the residents of the area, the innovative ways that they're looking at trying to heat their homes. And so we've had a pretty interesting day today. I certainly think that the testimony will be not only good for us to hear, certainly we don't get the opportunity as a state legislature to come to small communities around the state as much as I think that we certainly should. And so it's an honor to be here. And we're waiting to hear your testimony. So thank you for, once again, having us here and showing us the hospitality of your region.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And looking at both sides of the committee table, I don't see any additional comments before we get started. So let's just jump in and start taking testimony. And we're going to do this in basically no particular order, but we're going to try to get all the organizations and individuals as we can in today. So with that, I'd like to start with the mayor of Dillingham. If Alice, if you could step up, please identify yourself for the record and your affiliation, and give us your testimony, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair, and legislators. My name is Alice Ruby. I'm speaking to you today on behalf of the city of Dillingham. Once again, thank you for coming to the region and for allowing us to speak to you directly. It definitely means a lot to us. Briefly, I realize this is official testimony, but I would be very remiss if I didn't at least let you know who all helped with this weekend's activities, because there were a lot of organizations. And so I do need to say thank you to the city and the BB&A staff for helping us, BBDC and Robin for the great fish and the reception last night. Mayor Carolyn Smith and her Elekinagiat Council, their tribal council, and the Village Corporation for breakfast this morning, to GCI and the city for loaning the vehicles, to the private citizens that opened their homes for our tour of innovators and for themselves being innovators. Special thanks to Bob Hemshute and Malcolm Wright for devoting their weekend to be volunteer drivers. Also, the Dillingham City Schools for hosting the hearing today, and to Russell Nelson and his staff for setting up for us. And lastly, to Faith and the Dillingham High School Choir for preparing lunch, and to Nunamta, Nooshigat Co-op, BB&C, and the Bristol Bay Housing Authority for the food and supplies that they provided for today. You know, as with any function, it takes a whole community to work together to organize, and certainly they all came together in this case. So just for a little information on the city of Dillingham, I was able to tell you some last night, but again, Dillingham is a first-class city. We provide K-12 schools, 24-hour police service. That includes our jail, water and sewer, a state-certified landfill, street maintenance, all-tide dock, boat harbor, library, museum, fire and ambulance, senior citizens program, and planning. We do, as we described, try to be self-reliant. We try as hard as we can. We do that by taxing ourselves heavily with a 13-mil real and personal property tax, a 6% sales tax, a 10% bed and alcohol tax, and then fees that supplement almost every service. We have harbor fees, landfill fees, water and sewer fees, ambulance fees, and so on. According to the report prepared by DCED for 2008, Dillingham's per capita tax revenue exceeds that of several large communities in the state. For example, Dillingham's per capita tax revenue is $1,894. Anchorage is $1,505. Fairbanks North Star Borough is $1,050. Kodiak Island Borough is $924. Those are just a few examples of communities that are a little bit less heavily taxed per capita. Our general fund budget for fiscal year 2009 is $6.7 million. As within the past several years, we appropriate $1.2 million to the schools, roughly twice what we're required by law, and we recently took on a $15 million GO bond for school renovation. That's going to obligate us to a payment of about $1 million a year with what we hope is a $700,000 refund by the state. Needless to say, we strongly encourage you to continue that GO bond program. But as you're going to hear from citizens and agencies alike, we're buckling under the strain. This is true for both citizens and our municipal operations. The city's energy costs have increased 30% over the past 5 years. That's on top of skyrocketing cost of other operations like the 50% cost and 50% increase in health insurance, more demand for services, and everything else. As you look at energy needs, we would encourage you to look at the following. We know there's a need to implement long-term alternative energy options. We support that effort, and we want to be a part of that effort. However, we encourage you to continue to invest in that. However, our problem is we're in crisis right now. We need transitional solutions. We encourage the continuation of PCE both for citizens and for public entities. We're fortunate that our utility provider qualifies us for PCE. We do know that there are some communities where the utility company doesn't qualify, therefore the citizens don't qualify. We would ask you, when you're considering solutions, please don't forget the municipalities. We're suffering from the same high price for heating fuel and gas as the individual. In FY09, we expect to invest about $250,000 in heating fuel for all of our facilities. That's an increase in 1 year from $150,000. The consumers are concerned about the city's sales tax that proportionally increases as the cost of fuel increases. It's a really difficult situation because we don't have any other way to seek relief from those high costs. In Dillingham, the council enacted a waiver of a half of the sales tax on home heating fuel from January through April. It returned about $18 per 100 gallons to the consumer, which is about 3 gallons of fuel. So it's what we could do to tighten our belts and provide some relief to taxpayers. The waiver was expected to see us lose about $116,000 in revenue at the city level. And obviously, you compare that to $18 on the individual citizen, and it doesn't seem like a lot to the citizen, but it was a tremendous loss for the city. I would emphasize again, then, please consider the municipalities when you're looking at short-term solutions. One of the ways we would encourage you to look at is to develop ways to assist municipalities with current needs, such as funds to weatherize our existing buildings and to reduce the energy consumption. We support your plan to explore what is involved in the rural fuel pricing structure. We're as much in the dark as you are on why the price of fuel in Dillingham is more than the same product in Nome or even King Salmon. We encourage you to be sure to examine the cost of delivery as an element of that fuel structure. We encourage you to also examine the state's role in regulating fuel pricing, and again, that you consider delivery as a part of the fuel pricing structure. We would encourage you to examine the home energy rebate program for possible revisions to allow more people to qualify, especially the low middle income, and that's distinguished from the low income. We've heard from many citizens that cannot afford the energy rebate because they can't afford to invest in the audit and the upgrades that would be needed to their homes because their current income is expended on, oh, thank you very much, Ricky, on the current necessities, and that being home heating, food, and transportation. They have no surplus income, and we would hope there would be a way to structure that, and there are others that will testify today with suggestions on how they think it could be fixed. We encourage you, too, to examine the LIHEAP and the ACAP programs. The time required to process applications left many residents in trouble, especially elders, in a critical time of the year. We have some residents who've applied in December and still haven't received word on their applications, and we know that they're overwhelmed with applications and that there are issues there, but we would hope there's a way to address it. Lastly, we would encourage the state to target Dillingham as a resource center for technology, distribution of information, and of products to regional residents. We need to be able to provide every citizen, regardless of their income level, with information, with assistance, and also a source of products. Not every citizen can afford to go outside of Dillingham to both shop, evaluate, and purchase products. As you've seen through the tour of Dillingham, I hope, we have an excellent college campus, and we also have regional organizations that are willing to contribute the time and the effort that it would take. And that's the extent of my comments, Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair, and I again thank you for coming to Dillingham, and thank you very much for the opportunity both for us and our citizens to testify.
Thank you, Mayor Ruby. Questions, committee members? Not seeing any. Thank you very much for your testimony, Alice. Next, I'd like to call Donna Vukic up to the table, please. Donna, you're an old hand at this. We've seen you down Juneau a number of times, so if you please identify yourself. And
yes, my name is Donna Vukic. I'm the general manager for Naknek Electric Association in Naknek. And we want to welcome all of you to our region. We're really glad to see the legislators get out to some of the outlying areas and some of you for the second and third time. So we're really glad to see you, and thank you for coming. I handed out a couple pages to you to give you an update on where our project is, the geothermal regional plan that we're working on. We've just completed, or just in the process of completing, our last geophysical and work that is verifying some of the work we did last fall in aeromagnetic studies, and we are finding very favorable results, and we have signed on with Geothermax, who is the leading geothermal experts in the lower 48 right now, a number of projects with utilities and also with Department of Energy work that they've been testing, and also with Alaska Earth Science as project managers for us. And we just recently sent out our RFP for a drill rig and plan to begin drilling this summer. This is to talk about a regional plan. I think that falls into some of the longer visions that the state has had on trying to put a regional facility together where we're intertied, if not with the rail bed, at least with each other. Some of the smaller villages like Igayagik or Igagik are paying over $1 a kilowatt hour, where Dillingham and Naknek are paying some of the highest rates they've paid in years, but somewhere in the range of 43 cents. A kilowatt hour, and it is destroying the villages. Last year, our school in Bristol Bay Borough lost 45 students from October to October. We're having a very large decrease of population, and even though the ISA report came out saying that that wasn't really the case, they only looked at 10 years, and had you gone back 20 years, you would have seen what that decrease is. Our school 10 years ago was 300 kids, and we're down to 137 this year as of October's count. So we are in a crisis mode for the whole region, not just for us, and We've had numbers of schools shut down. We've had more people leave because of the not having the same quality of education. And so our utility has spent 10 years working towards this project, and we're at those final stages. And I'm happy to see the Renewable Energy Fund and the work that the legislature has done in establishing of that, and we're very much in favor of that and are glad to see kind of a proactive move. And so that's about all I had, and I appreciate that you're here and willing to listen to us.
Thank you very much, Donna. Questions for Donna? Let me ask you, Donna, what's the projected amount of power from the geothermal project, sort of at the, maybe you could go through the range of power that the project might actually produce.
So we're looking for a 25 megawatt power source that would be expandable over a percentage of years up to 50. That's our ultimate load that we're looking for. The drill will identify and tell us exactly what we're doing, and there's many ways to enhance that if we're unable to reach it based on a conventional system. Geothermics has a lot of experience with taking a project that appears to be mediocre and making it very successful, so we are very optimistic about seeing that happen. The region itself at peak uses about 18 megawatts, and we would look to raise the bar and produce hydrogen. We would be doing district heating, at least in the areas that we were able to serve with that, reducing the heating fuel cost in at least several villages, and moving forward so that we would not need to go back to our diesel, because once we get used to not using diesel, it'll be hard to turn the clock back.
Okay. Representative Ramirez and then Representative Peterson.
Thank you. I've read these two documents that you provided to the power plant. One is by NEA and the other one is by Geothermex, Alaska Earth Sciences. The one from NEA says that it's a $200 million project. The one from Geothermic says it's a $96 million in capital costs. Can you just explain the difference between those two figures?
They're looking at if we were having to go to an enhanced geothermal system, the cost would go up on the power plant and collection facility. Two different things there. We're talking about doing our inner ties and the facility in our document, where they're worried only about generation.
Representative Peterson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And just as a follow-up to that, where were you planning, were you hoping to get this money from the state, or you have other sources that you can borrow for this money? Are you planning to bond for it, or what's the plan?
Well, we're doing the speculative drill. We were hoping to have a match of $5 million from the state of Alaska. We have $3 million from the federal side. And our co-op has already spent $2 million, but we have pledged to borrow the money to get up to the amount to finish this drill, which is imperative that we drill. Until we go down there, we're not going to have anything, and we'll continue exactly like we are today.
Thank you.
Not seeing any additional questions. Thank you, Donna, for flying over to be here today. We
Thank
really appreciate
that.
And thanks to all the rest of the folks. I see there's a couple more in the audience that actually were on the plane as well. Jason Matrokin. Jason, you want to come up and state your name and your affiliation for the record, please, and we'd like to hear your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Co-Chair Millett, Speaker, Mr. Speaker. My name is Jason Matrokin. I'm a Bristol Bay Native Corporation shareholder. I'm also the new president and CEO of BBNC. Was not at the reception last evening at BBEDC, and I was very pleased and honored to find out that there was a presentation made to my predecessor, Hjalmar Olsen, who is here in the audience, and I just wanted to recognize him for his years of work for BBNC, and it's an honor to take on the role of the president and CEO. I'm here today speaking on behalf of the corporation. I have some prepared testimony today that I will also have emailed to staff. I'm pleased to address the members of the state legislature as well as those in attendance regarding the energy crisis facing the Bristol Bay region and its residents. There should be no question that our region has faced abnormally high energy costs as compared to other geographic regions in the state. I appreciate the work of the Alaska Legislature and the Alaska Energy Authority to address energy needs in Bristol Bay. The $5 million and renewable energy grants that was recently awarded in Bristol Bay may ultimately be helpful to lower energy costs in the region. My concern is that this is only the tip of the iceberg when it comes to the needs of our communities and villages. What the region needs are support for projects that will address energy costs today, next week, next month, and next year. While I support the notion of long-term energy solutions and the need for studies and sustainable funding streams, we cannot wait 5 or 10 or 20 years for mega-project solutions to address this crisis. I urge you, as I urge all of our regional leadership and local community members, to focus on energy costs, high energy costs, and their impacts on the region today. Small demonstration projects, while they may only benefit few, they're affordable, they're sustainable, and they ultimately lead to long-term and large-scale solutions for the greater good. Bristol Bay Native Corporation supports all energy solutions for the region as long as they are realistic and ultimately affordable. BBNC will consider investing in energy projects if they bring a financial return back to the corporation. To contribute monetary support of individual energy projects without a return expectation takes away from our ability to fund increasing shareholder dividends, something we have done for 30 consecutive years. Having said that, we are open to new business in the region, especially those that address lower cost energy. BBNC is also supportive of appropriately increasing PCE funding to keep up with the high rural electricity costs. We have explored a similar program for home heating oil and would urge a legislature to consider opening discussions on how to equalize expenses for those who are heating their homes who do not live on the electrical grid, many of whom are not only village residents but on the rail belt as well. Again, BBNC is appreciative of the work that has been done thus far. We're all partners in this matter, and I hope you share the same opinion that no single solution will solve this crisis. It will take a balanced approach of renewables and non-renewables, residential and commercial, wind, solar, hydro, efficient and reliable transportation of fuel, and a breakup of any fuel monopolies. Local ingenuity can get us through these times, but it takes resources to apply good ideas. Grant funding alone cannot pave the way. Private funding from all available sources must come to the table to address the needs of today. I appreciate the opportunity to speak on behalf of Bristol Bay Native Corporation, and I thank you for coming out to Dillingham.
Thank you, Jason. Any questions from committee members? Not seeing any. Thank you for coming over to testify, Jason. Next, I'd like to call Dorothy Larson from the Chogyung Tribe, if you're in the audience, Dorothy. I've got you on the list here. Is that Tom, are you testifying on her behalf? Would you come forward, please? Put your name on the record and identify your affiliation as well.
For the record, my name is Thomas Tilden. I'm the tribal chief for Chugging. And Chugging has 2,400 members throughout the state of Alaska. I want to also welcome you folks for coming out here. And also, it's very unfortunate that you were unable to make it to Bethel, because I think that you would have heard a lot more stories in regards to the crisis that we're in. I'm a fisherman, and I also work part-time for different organizations. The fuel crisis that we have here, I think, is not something that sprung upon us, but is something that has been done, that has happened over years. And I think we foresaw it some years ago when we had an economic energy crisis in this region. I think there's a lot that the state can do to help us in this region. I think one thing that we need definitely from the state is to expand your price-fixing investigation to come out here to southwestern Alaska and take a look at who's delivering fuel, who's selling fuel, and how much we're paying. When I checked the price of gas this morning for Anchorage, it was $2.37 a gallon. When you buy gas down here at the pump, $6.31. There's a significant difference between what Anchorage is paying and what rural Alaska is paying. And I'm sure that when you go out to the smaller villages like Kokanok, then you're paying $11 a gallon. And that warrants investigation. I know that personally, in my own home, I built a home that was well insulated. I have 8-inch walls, and I still pay $1,200 a month for fuel in this community. And I'm one of the lucky ones because I work, I have a job in addition to being a fisherman. I think that we, and I mean the state of Alaska, have to look at short-term as well as long-term goals. And I also support organizations like NACTIC Electric, which is looking for thermal energy. And I think organizations like that need to be funded. When I look at Nooshigak Electric, and they're looking at capturing hydroelectric, then I support projects like that. I think projects that have long-term and real good benefits to the people of the area and service more than one community definitely needs to be funded. I hope that the governor is not serious about not accepting any of the stimulus package money. And I hope that when you guys go back to Juneau that you guys urge her to be serious about this, because that stimulus package money is for all of Alaska. And it's going to affect us because we have projects in the wind as well. And we need that money. We need that work so that we can buy our own fuel. I think we're pretty proud people here. I think that we feel very independent and feel that we want to be able to do things on our own. But I know that we're struggling. I know that people are struggling out there. And I must go on record and thank the person from Mnemonic that broke the silence and got on his radio and said, people are suffering out here, and demonstrated that they are. And I know that they are. But that's just one of the Alaska Native ways, I think, is that we were taught not to talk about our suffering. We were taught not to talk about our boasting. And so that's just the way we are. And we do suffer in silence. And I think that, like I stated earlier, it's unfortunate that you weren't able to go up to Bethel. But I know that things are far worse off because they have a different, less economy than we do. We're fortunate that we have a fishing economy here. But it doesn't make it any easier. And I think that one of the things that the legislators can do is take a look at subsistence. Subsistence is a way of life for all of the communities in rural Alaska. When the price of fuel goes up, they have to eat. And more reliance and more dependence become on subsistence. And we know that the state of Alaska has taken a hard stand against rural preference. But I think it's time to re-examine that in hard times like this, because it is something that we need, and it does have something to do with energy. I don't know how many of you have ever put a sandwich into your mouth and decided whether, or you had to make a decision whether to eat or whether to heat your homes. But that is a tough decision to make, and I think that subsistence will cure some of that. Doing away with some of the regulations that are required for folks to subsist naturally, because that's what people are resorting to. Here in Bristol Bay, we're fishermen. We watch millions of dollars of salmon, worth of salmon, going by because the processors cannot process all of the salmon that we have. We need the state of Alaska to take a real hard look at that, because you're losing out too. Because every salmon that goes by, you lose out your percentage of 5% of the value of that salmon because of the fish tax that you collect. Our municipal government here misses out. Our fishermen miss out. And with that money, we probably could sustain ourselves a lot better. But millions of dollars slip through our waters every year because of the salmon that we are unable to catch. I think that some of the former folks that came up here, you know, suggested some solutions to you that really need to be taken seriously. I got to applaud Senator Hoffman for his bill in regards to capping the price of fuel at $3 a gallon. That is a bold step, but I think that is something that is very necessary for us to sustain ourselves and for us to survive. I want to urge you guys to expand your investigation on the price fixing in Southwest Alaska. take a hard look at what the state approved in regards to when they went ahead and okayed the Yukon Fuels and Crowley, when Crowley bought them out. Take a look at that consent decree that was approved at this time and see whether or not it warrants investigation. Ensure that the governor or express to the governor to accept the stimulus package. Tell the fish board to come out here to Dillingham and hear us. We can't afford to go to Anchorage. The people that are going to go to Anchorage are the people that are going to come from Seattle and Oregon and California because it's cheaper for them to go to Anchorage and testify than it is for us from Dillingham to go to Anchorage to testify. But you guys got that power. You guys could force them to come out here and listen to us because we've got concerns and we've got issues. They're about ready to make a very dramatic change in our fishery. And if we don't have input because we're not participating or we're not there, then it's unfair to us, the people that live here. We're going to be pushed out of this fishery. I think we already are. And it's something that you can do. Take a hard look again at subsistence. Take a revote. It's a cut because it is something that we really need. Fund the hydro project of Nooshigak. Fund the thermal energy of Naknek. Take a look at the weatherization programs that we have. A lot of people are waiting in line just to get audited so that they could re-insulate their homes. Otherwise, they're not going to be reimbursed. Put people to work. The state of Alaska has numerous facilities in every single village, every single community, either at the state airports or state highway systems. Put people to work, insulate those buildings. Those buildings are poorly insulated. You could create all kind of work out there by just doing that, putting in different windows, insulating those buildings, so you're not paying money for a lot of fuel to go out into those villages. So I want to thank you all again, once again, for coming out here to Dillingham and listening to the folks and encourage you to do all you can to get out to the Bethel area and listen to those folks. And I hope that every time you put food to your mouth that you would think about what some of the folks here are thinking about, and that is, should I eat or should I heat my home? So thank you very much for coming.
Thank you, Tom. And before you leave the table, are there any questions from committee members? Not seeing any. Thanks once again for coming forward, Tom. Dave, do you want to come forward and testify on behalf of the Housing Authority?
Sure. My name is Dave McClure. I serve as Executive Director of the Bristol Bay Housing Authority, also as the Chairman of the Southwest Alaska Vocational Education Center in King Salmon. I'm also director of Nooshigak Cooperatives here. I've lived in the Bay for 30 years. I wish to thank you and the full legislature again for the energy legislation that was passed last year, specifically weatherization and the alternative energy funding. And we appreciate the efforts you folks have made this weekend to come on out with your time and see our challenges firsthand. I also want to stress that the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation has done an excellent job of mobilizing the resources provided by the weatherization funds, and they've worked well in an expeditious manner for us to accomplish the efforts to weatherize homes in our region. My main point today is to convey the extreme scope of the need of our region. I've emailed to Adam and to Bryce a copy of a spreadsheet which indicates that at the 80% median income level, there are over 1,200 homes in our region, and that times the $30,000 that is available per unit, that drives a need of approximately $42 million. 100% of median is what the program is geared for, so the actual need would even be on that. The 80% of median comes from the statistics that are readily available through the Census Bureau. To extend our resources, we've tried to use an average of about $24,000 per home, which will allow us to weatherize more homes for the same amount of money rather than going to the full amount. Even at that expenditure level, payback's accomplished within 10 years, and it has the most important benefit in the interim that the actual cash that the homeowner would save, approximately 40% maximum in fuel consumption, that's about $3,000 on an average, say at $7 per gallon, and say the person spends about $7,000 a year. that'll save them $3,000 a year. Please know that the training dollars associated with these funds are well spent. We partner with the Denali Commission, the Alaska Works Partnership, and our Voc Ed Center in King Salmon to train local individuals to become raters, and even more importantly, workers who understand building sciences. We've trained over 25 individuals to date in various courses of the components of building science, OSHA training, in order to maximize local hire in the villages. With the rebate program, we were discussing with the HSC about folks who were mentioned earlier here. They fall just above the income threshold of the weatherization program, but due to the high cost, they don't have the cash flow to pay the rater, and therefore they can't go any further in that program. We've asked HSC to look at perhaps a waiver, and that we could use our raters that have already been trained through the weatherization dollars as this way we can do that and have those folks rated. BVHA also supports the efforts of Senator Hoffman to reduce the cost of fuel oil in the region. While we support the current effort to assist communities with the purchase of fuel, and that will ensure that everybody has adequate funds in the community to get the fuel to the village, we also think that the best method is a point-of-sale reduction by state funds, using state funds. And it could be done with a means test methodology, much as is usual for the lifeline in the telephone business. The Federal Universal Service Fund subsidy, if you show that you're qualified by any federal program, then you're eligible for that program without doing any necessary verifications. So the similar type thing could be done to hold the administrative costs down. As Robin stated last night, we have several instances of people that have turned to electrical heat because they can't afford to buy oil ahead of time. Then they have a large electric bill to pay, which is a lot more inefficient than fuel. We've had that circumstance a number of times. BVHA and the villages have used federal HUD funds to react to the high cost of fuel. We do a much smaller scale than what BVDC does, but about $300,000 a year is used for direct subsidy for energy vouchers at the village level for fuel. The stimulus funding, as I mentioned last night, will provide by formula about $2.4 million to our region through HUD for construction activities, such as weather stripping, window insulation, and other type work. It's important for the committee to continue the funding the weatherization program. As I stated, even with federal stimulus funding, the need in the region is six times what our available funding is. We also support power cost equalization. In many of our villages, electric costs have increased dramatically due to the spreading of those increased costs over fewer and fewer consumers. PC is an absolute necessity for residential customers. The hardest job of all of us is managing realistic expectations of our residents. However, by continued funding with accountability of the resources expended, effective and efficient use of those funds will allow our scarce resources to go further. Madam Chair and Mr. Chair, I would ask that Phil Anguson, our weatherization director, that he has a little specifics on the program to follow, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you, Dave. Any questions for Dave McClure? Not seeing any. Thank you very much, and we'll have Val come up here in a little bit. Next, I'd like to ask Frank Corbin to come up and testify, please. Good afternoon, Frank.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, Mr. Speaker, my name is Frank Corbin. I'm the General Manager for Nishigak Electric and Telephone Cooperative. And like many people in this room, I wear more than one hat. I'm also President of the Dillingham Chamber of Commerce, so welcome to Dillingham. I hope you can come back when there's fish in the water and green in the park and you don't have to run back to town for a hearing. I'd like to, a little background on the cooperative. It is a consolidated utility in that we do the cable TV and internet and telephone as well. And the importance of that is that it takes resources and that we have to balance our efforts and our resources between the different pieces of the utility. I'd like to give a couple quick examples in that last year we spent about $1 million, and we borrowed most of that to change out telephone equipment that was mandated by the federal law enforcement regulations. So we just have no choice. There are many things in the utility business that you just have no choice. And on the internet side, we have a project that we've been working on for a couple years to bring internet out here and broadband bandwidth on a terrestrial microwave. And that has the potential to feed at least six more villages along the way around Iliamna and down the peninsula and get us a better bandwidth than we get off the satellite and significantly less expensive. And so those are some of the things that we deal with while we're dealing with the energy crisis that we have. And we haven't been slacking on that. We have been involved for several years in the generator upgrade program in our powerhouse, and we put in the newest, most efficient generators we can find, and saving a considerable amount of fuel, which translates directly into dollars. And at the same time, thanks to the state of Alaska and the Denali Commission and the federal government, we were able to fund most of that with grant funds. And what that enables us to do is keep the overhead down so that we don't have to charge that directly to the rate base. So in theory, our rates could be higher if we'd had to borrow money to put those generators in. And moving forward, once we have the powerhouse upgrade complete, we do have a plan for a hydro project to move our base power load into and source into something other than diesel generation. Now, like Juno, we'd keep our diesels for backup and maintenance periods and such. But in any scenario where we have a good portion of power available through a hydro project, there would be a significant ability to or potential to lower the rates for electricity. That actual amount, again, depends on the financing. The more we borrow, the more of the debt service that gets put back into the rate base. The more that's grant funded through my request with the state of Alaska and the federal government, then the lower we can keep those base rates throughout the next 30 years or until the debt's paid off. And so that's the good news. Bad news of having grant funded generation at this time is that we can financially, as a small co-op, trade some of our debt service instead of and pay that back instead of fuel expense. So hydro looks to be a very good project for us. The other side of that is when we get a fixed rate, that is our fixed rate until we pay that debt service off. So I'd be happy to answer questions about that project.
Thank you, Frank. Representative Kakia?
Actually, thank you, Frank. This is the first time I'd heard about, this trip has been the first time I'd heard about your hydro potential. So how far out in the future? Because in looking at the energy policy and recovery plan, they're talking about that big bridge, and I'm just kind of curious, how far out do you think it is? How close to reality?
Those are good questions. It's very viable. It's a real project. The technology is all there. The course of the project really depends on what I call a tipping point, at which time the utility has enough funds promised towards the project that we could basically put ourselves up as collateral for the balance and actually get started. Now, there's 1 year, if not two, where we can continue with environmental studies, historical preservation surveys, and things like that nature. But at some point, in 2 years, we would have to either be pouring concrete at the site or not. And once we started pouring concrete, I think the construction schedule is 3 years.
Follow up, Representative Kagia.
Kind of curious if the state, if what your relationship with the state is on the financing package.
Again, another good question. We had applied for funds with the Alaska Energy Authority and the renewable grant funding, and have been awarded $4 million here a couple of weeks ago from that committee for this project, and so we are going forward with that as much as we can. And so the project itself has been vetted and investigated by the Alaska Energy Authority, and we hope to keep them involved as we go forward. But we're moving. We're not sitting still.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to ask you what it's costing you to generate a kilowatt hour this year versus last year, and what is it? What are you charging your customers for last year and this year, if you can remember?
I'm not exactly clear on, I believe last year was around 33 cents a kilowatt. Now, we have a residential rate, so that's what I'll be using here. There's a couple tenths of a cent difference between the commercial and rates. But for residential, it's around 33 cents a kilowatt last year, and it went up to 46.3 when we got our fuel delivered in the fall, and it'll be 46.3 until our next load of fuel gets here. Of that 46.3 cents, I believe 17 cents or 17 and a half is overhead, and then the rest is just simple fuel cost. And again, that gets back to what I mentioned earlier about having the grant-funded generators. That allows us to keep our overhead at 17 and a half cents. It's only gone up one time, I think, in the last 5 years, the base of our overhead costing going for that. Right now, diesel in Seattle is $1.25 a gallon wholesale, and I think we paid $4.25 a gallon last summer for it. I would also mention that transportation costs have become a concern. Our quote for transportation costs for next summer is already basically the equivalent of 25% of our fuel cost will apparently be in transportation.
Representative Millett and then Representative Ramos.
How much grant money did you get from Denali Commission, and did you get it all in one grant, or was there several grants from the commission for the project? For the
power upgrade project,
power upgrade.
There was a $1 million grant from the federal government. Then there was a $1.3 million and some change grant from the Denali Commission, a $1 million grant from the state of Alaska, and a $1.6 million grant from the RUS, USDA. And that's a separate project from the recent renewable grant of $4 million to get going on the Lake Elba Hydro project.
Representative Ramirez.
Mr. Chairman, a process question. If time allows, after we've taken public testimony, sometimes we learn so much when we have a panel. Would it be possible at the very end of the day, if time allows, to bring Mr. Haginson up and a couple of people from BBNC and kind of just bat around the idea of what timelines, funding sources look like? I know with NACNIC, I don't think that group qualified for the initial AEA, the 77 projects, $100 million. It would be interesting, depending on how time looks, at 4:30 or 4:45.
I think that's an excellent suggestion, Representative Ramirez. We certainly have a long list of people to testify today, so we're not sure we get to that point, but I would like very much to have some kind of a dialogue like that. Not seeing any additional questions for Mr. Corbin. Thank you, Frank, for coming forward. Robin Samuelson, are you here, Robin, still? While he's walking up to the table, we want to thank you, Robin, very much for your hospitality, and I think you're the best cooking CEO in Alaska.
Yeah.
No question about that. Certainly the mayor and Charlene Lopez for their help as well and their hospitality. Last night at BBDC we had a great community reception, had about, I'm guessing 50 some odd people show up. We got a chance to have the Speaker of the House answer a couple of questions, and a number of regional leaders make presentations that we'll be hearing from today. And for those out in the KDLG listening land, Robin has just handed out a couple of papers. And Robin, welcome to the table.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Robin Samuelson. I'm the President and CEO of the Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation. First of all, Representative Edgman, I want to warn you. Your wife told me that the next village you go to, don't bring home a damn dog. Rice went to a picnic this morning. Somebody had a cute little puppy, and his boy fell in love with it, and Bryce fell in love with it, and his wife was telling me out in the hallway, Bryce brought it home. So if anybody wants to get rid of a dog team, look up Bryce.
Well, the dog is probably going to be named after the person who gave it to us. We all know who gave it to us in a while here.
First off, I'd like to thank you for coming out to Dillingham in the Bristol Bay region. I think this is the number one issue faced in the Bristol Bay region today. The most vulnerable people are people like my mother, who's elderly, partly disabled, the disabled folks. We can't seem to keep up with the problems that energy is creating for us. not only is it raising the price of our lights, heating our homes, it's raising the price of our groceries in the store, the taxi cabs that we take from the airport. The whole spectrum is focused on the energy. I agree, we have become complacent on oil, but I think the situation now demands a radical change within not only the Bristol Bay region, but all of Alaska on how we think about the energy needs. I think we finally realized how vulnerable we are by the folks over from the Middle East. The $148 a barrel, that I think a barrel of Alaska crude closed about $40 a barrel on Friday. But that shouldn't make us complacent again. If it's only going to be the fools that are fooled twice with the same trick. So even though we have diminishing returns to the state of Alaska, I think we need to press on and develop a new beginning. I was born and raised here in Dillingham. I don't want to leave this community when I retire. My family is all out here. My friends are all out here. The food that I like to eat is all out here. I shouldn't be forced to move to Wasilla, Anchorage, or any other place. But a lot of our folks in rural Alaska have been forced. They haven't been so fortunate to have a full-time job like I have. I also, BBDC represents 17 villages. I think I'm pretty well schooled in the problems that are facing our villages because none of them people in the village, even if they're not a CDQ community, have known me all my life and have no problems picking up the phone and unloading on me. And, they're looking for solutions. I don't have the answers. I don't think this room has the answers. I think we got to look at the short-term, medium, and long-range goals and come out with an energy plan for Alaska, regardless of what the barrel of oil is doing. BBDC is really involved in education, in the fishing industry. We provide scholarships to our kids to go out to school. We encourage them to go out to school. There's very little for them to come back to in this region. We don't have, and I'm not being derogatory towards Nishigak, we don't have fast internet. We got snail mail. I was just out visiting my son that works as an engineer out in Oregon, and I couldn't believe the speed of his email. We don't have the movie theaters out here like we once did when I was growing up. That's all changed. And it seems like kids today, they want things yesterday, they don't have the patience. So it's real hard to bring kids back. My board realizes this, and we give a college loan forgiveness. So as they go out and get educated and come back into the region, we'll pay part of their college tuition for the years they stay in the region. That way we don't have a brain drain in the region. I think everything's on the table, wind, solar, tidal, geothermal, and yes, nuclear. I watched a George Bush aircraft carrier get launched here on TV in the festivities, and one of the generals said that thing could run, and I can't say exactly the speed, but it's 30-plus knots for the next 20 years without coming back to port. I heard that Galena, the nuclear reactor that was proposed for Galena, is within the 6 to 10-foot range. Cost $20 million. I don't know what Nishigak Electric spends. I don't know what Naknek Electric spends. But I'll bet you it's more than $20 million over the next 20 years, the lifespan of these nuclear reactors. Now, I don't know nothing about these nuclear reactors. But when was the last nuclear accident? Three Mile Island. The admiral on TV said it's one of the safest mechanisms around. I think that should be on the table. The carbon footprint that we live in today, that's very big in Europe and other places. And coming from our community in Bristol Bay, when you're dealing with MSC certification salmon, they want to know what your carbon footprint is. It's one of them sexy new things that the industry is demanding out there. The fishery here has supported the commercial fishermen for 125 years. It supported the subsistence users since time immemorial. We have a vibrant fishing community here. Yes, we've had problems. Just when we seem to be making the advances from 40 cents a pound fish to approaching a dollar a pound, along comes $5 and $6 a barrel diesel to our fishermen. It basically wiped out our shoulder seasons. I'm trying to put, BBDC is trying to put processing plants in villages so we could extend the unemployment in our communities as well as extend the opportunity for the fishermen. We have to find cheap power. That's going to be the key. We need ice. We need refrigeration. We need longer airports. That isn't going to happen overnight, but I think a long-range plan for communities such as Bristol Bay, such as the AYK region, with the help of the state, with the help of the federal government, we'll get over this impasse that we're in. If we take the short-term approach, as I said earlier, I think we'd be fools. We'll let future generations down in Alaska. It's up to folks like you that sit on this committee in the Alaska legislature to set goals and objectives and set them high for not only urban Alaska, but rural Alaska. We need to change our mindset. Quit giving us entitlement programs. Our entitlement programs that people think that they're entitled to something. You know, my dad kicked me off his boat when I tried to tell him where we should go set the net when I was 13 years old. And he said, Rab, he always called me Rab. He says, Rab, I ran away from an orphanage when I was 13 and went pearl diving, washing dishes in the mine. He says, now you're telling Dad what to do? It's time for you to go. And I ended up fishing a 22-foot Seymour skiff from that day forward. I was selling Christmas trees when I turned 16 years old here in Dillingham. Who the hell would buy a Christmas tree? He wouldn't give me a penny for gas. And if I wanted girlfriends, I had to have gas for that old truck of mine. So I started selling Christmas trees downtown. I was the first garbage service. I started a garbage service to help pay for my gasoline for my truck, for me and my friends. There was no entitlement program. You had to go out and break your back doing projects. When Tom Ward needed a dirt ditch dug by hand down at Standard Oil, he knew he could call me. I'd be happy to go work for him for $2.50 an hour digging a ditch. The $1,200 that you gave out last year, the legislature gave out last year, don't get me wrong, helped a lot of people. Helped a lot of people out in this region. Most of us forgot about that $1,200, and next year it'll be off our minds. If you took all that $1,200 and gathered them up and worked with Nooshigak and worked with the Bristol Bay, the BBs of Bristol Bay, to find a solution within Bristol Bay for a long-term problem and made that investment, I think we'd be well on our way. Don't get me wrong. A lot of people really enjoyed that $1,200. A lot of my friends put it to their fuel and their light bills. But I know a lot of my friends that went to the Rippy Parlor. I know a lot of my friends bought a new snow goal. There's nothing wrong with that, but that isn't what the money was intended for. And I think if we're going to get out of this situation, we need to really focus in on the problem, and the problem is energy. We can't do it here in Bristol Bay ourselves. The BBs, we have a partnership with the BBs. We have a good relationship with all the tribes and the city governments within the Bristol Bay region. But we don't have the expertise. We don't have the financial backing to do it alone. This is where the state needs to come in and help us. The salmon fishery is going to progress. I see the day that will be over a dollar a pound, and it's all due to quality improvements. I passed out the foregone harvest survey, and you'll hear a number of people talk about it. The fishermen between 2003 and 2008 lost $131 million in foregone harvest in Bristol Bay. That's just to the fishermen. If you add the first wholesale value, it's $360 million. If you go to the Naknek-Quijack district between 2003 and 2008, that thing's lost an average of about $95 million between that time period. $12 million, $21 million, $13 million, $17 million, $15 million. That's on an annual basis that we let swim up the river, be above and beyond what fish and game needed for escapement. We need them dollars in our community. Them fishermen need them dollars to stay in their community. Those fishermen spend them dollars in their community. That turns over six times. They go to the hardware store. They go to the restaurant. Them dollars keep our communities alive. So I don't have the total solution, but I want to thank you guys for coming out, listening to the folks here. Hopefully you'll get a bunch of calls, because we're pretty blessed here in Dillingham. They're pretty blessed over in Naknek. And as you get further out in more remote areas, they're not so blessed. It's pretty stressful out there. I just talked to my good friend down in Perryville that came up for the BBNA Officer and Directors Workshop. He was so proud that Perryville put up 10 windmills, 10 windmills to lower their economic dependence on fossil fuels. Hattie Albrecker down at Ugashik, always talking about the windmills and the solar that they have going on down there. As somebody mentioned earlier, that's the start. If we could lessen our dependence 10, 15, 20%, that's a heck of a start to the future, that we all want to be free from fossil fuels, which I don't think we'll ever be free from fossil fuels, but we've got to minimize our dependence on fossil fuels. I want to keep Bristol Bay alive. I want to keep our villages alive. Some of the saddest people you'll see is when they move away from their village. And nobody wants to move away from their home, and we don't want to move away from our homes in our region. Thank you all for coming out.
Thank you, Robin. Representative Ramos.
You're one of the most articulate folks in this room. And how do you think we ought to go about it? You know, we were talking on the van ride over here. There's an outfit in Fairbanks that wants $250 million to build a liquefaction plant on the North Slope because we have problems in the interior with fuel costs. You got regional hubs like Nome or here in Dillingham who have, you know, 47-cent kilowatt costs. But in Nome, when we looked at the Banner Wind program, we said, well, are you gonna? We asked Bering Straits Native Corporation, are you gonna double or triple the amount of wind turbines here in Nome? They said, no, we're gonna go out to villages that need it worse than we do, that are paying over a dollar a kilowatt. So where do you think the state has only limited resources? Do you start in the villages that are paying more than a dollar a kilowatt? Do you start in the regional communities that are paying 40 to 50 cents a kilowatt? Do you start in the urban centers that if they're well, they need any less help? And then you push it out. If you're making policy for the state, and there's, let's say that there's $10 billion worth of need to build out energy infrastructure, and the state, you know, let's say it had $700 million that it kept the $1,200. It would have had $700 million. In which direction, big picture, how would you allocate the money? Where do you see sending it first? To the little villages that are hurting the worst, the regional hubs like your community that are, as you say, relatively healthy, the urban centers where the people, you know, where the largest amount of people in the state live? What do you think?
Through the chair, most of my communities aren't really healthy. We have many Emonics in Bristol Bay. Don't be fooled. I could have 10 Nick Tucker sitting up here that are village administrators from villages around the bay, and they could echo the words of Nick Tucker out of Emonic. We're hanging on. We're kind of like, Killjoy or whatever it is, you know, where he's just looking over the table hanging on. We're like Killjoy out here. We're just hanging on. I think, first of all, you need to develop good criteria. Throwing money at a problem isn't going to be a solution. You know, that is not the solution. It isn't how much money you throw at a problem. I think Steve back there has we need to expand his shop. We need to put more people in place like Steve that will look at proposals and say, okay, what's the long-range goals of the Bristol Bay region? How are you going to lessen your economic dependence? And you go out and you do an energy audit of every one of your communities. You look at your generation diesels. Are they new generation diesels, old generation diesels? You sit down with the tribes. We can't turn our back on the tribes. Tribes bring in a lot of money to the region, especially this region. They're a major, major economic force within the region. We sit down with the city government. There's got to be a marriage between, there's got to be at least three legs to the stool that you have the state, the tribes, and the city governments working together in the region. Those three entities could change the dynamics within a region. I think that there's always going to be regions that are further advanced than other regions. You see that as you travel around the state. The thing of it is that as policy setters, you guys got to set the goals and objectives that you guys want to achieve. And then go out with an RFP to all the communities, all the regions, all the city governments, all the tribes, and force everybody to the table. Force the BBNC, the BBEDCs, all the organizations to the table to come up with a comprehensive plan for Bristol Bay. And as money, federal dollars, become available, and President Obama has made it number three or four of his priorities, is to change how we consume energy. So we got to, you know, you guys got to structure yourselves, and we got to start thinking that, okay, if he's going to really do that, then we've got to put ourselves in a position to take advantage of that situation. And I guess the short answer to your question is planning, due diligence, not just throwing money out.
Thank you. Representative Herron, and then Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Madam Chairman. Robin, I'd like to make a comment on the thing about Nick Tucker and Amonic is that he's just the canary in the coal mine. And when we stop hearing those people, you know what that means. The canary is no longer alive. And so you and I both may not look young, but we think we're young. But the advantage you have is you're wise. You're a wise person. And that's because you've grown up around an abundance of good regional leaders, and I appreciate what you try to do for the people of this region. And the reason for that is that you had a role model, and he was a real good friend of mine, and it was your father, Harvey. And in fact, my daughter's nickname is the same as your mother's. But his laugh, his love of life, really meant a lot to me and to you too. And so I'd like to share again what I shared last night with the people that came to the reception is that, you know, he had a real affectionate saying for the people from the region that he was born in. And it was something special to him. And his saying it to me was special to me that I represent the people of Kuskokwim. They're called Kusko Quackers. Thank you.
Okay, you Kusko Quacker.
and before we go to Representative Tuck, we'll just let the record note that this committee, although unable to make it to Bethel on Saturday and very much reluctantly so because of the weather conditions, we are committed to making it out. And, Bob, whenever you tell us it's a good time to go out, we do plan to go out to Bethel. So, Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the sheet that you passed out, the matrix, I just got a couple quick questions. Now, the first one is the 34, take a look at Electric, 34 cents and then the 19 cents with the power cost equalization. Does that 34 cents include the 19 cents?
No.
Or is that already deducted?
I think that's deducted through the chair.
So it would be normally 19 cents higher than that.
Yes.
What we see. And then my second question, Mr. Chair, is we see a couple of Portage Creek there and Clark's Point that have flat rates. How did those come about? Can you give me a little bit of history? Give us a little bit of history about that.
Portage Creek, most folks have moved out of there. They've closed the school. I think there's two or three people left living in Portage Creek.
Okay.
The Clark's Point situation, no, I can't explain that.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Robin while we have him at the table? Not seeing any. Thank you, Robin. And once again, thank you last night for all the hospitality and the good food.
Thank you all for coming.
Peter Christopher, do you want to come to the table? While Peter's coming to the table, let me also say that the Energy Committee is committed to going elsewhere throughout Alaska. And my co-chair just reminded me that outside of the Bethel trip that we hope to get in sometime, maybe the spring or early fall, that we do plan, and hopefully the speaker consents, maybe to have the Energy Committee continue doing some outreach, because the energy situation in Alaska certainly isn't just confined to Western Alaska, but it's a problem that the whole state faces. So, Peter, if you could please identify yourself for the record and anybody you might be representing today.
My name is Peter Christopher, Sr. I'm from New Stewiacke. It's about 52 northeast miles from this community on the Nusigak River. We're one of the rural villages in Bristol Bay. Talking about the energy, I couldn't believe the cost of fuel that we had to purchase last fall. In our corporate entity, we have a tank farm, and we supply heating fuel and gas. Almost $500,000 we had to purchase just from that community to service the community people. We're not there to make big bucks as a corporate entity. We're mainly there as an entity to service the community. So when we purchase the fuel, we just make a little additive to take care of our employees. So for example, for the heating fuel, it costs $6.64 a gallon. That's if you pick it up on your own. But if we use a tank for truck, fuel truck, for delivery, it's $7.14 a gallon. And here, people are talking about energy increase. The rural villages are impact. No matter what price comes up by the fuel company that delivers, that's what we'll buy or we'll purchase. We have no other choice. When the fuel company comes up any villages in Bristol Bay, whatever is offered, we don't have no optional price. One thing that I learned of during that small business in workshop in Anchorage, I met a lady from North Star Gas. She's planning to come into Dillingham Hub and meet with the folks from here in possibility of reducing the cost of fuel. I don't want to downsize existing companies that we have. You know, I'm not saying that not degrading them. That's all we have, though, you know. But if we have more of the fuel company that comes into Bristol Bay, I would appreciate that Dillingham welcomes the North Store reps when they come in and want to service the Bristol Bay region. I would like for them to come here to get the price change or even to reduce the price of fuel energy. The other part, these electrical lights, we have AVAC. In the past 3 to 4 years, we had worked with AVAC to put in a new electrical plant, and also to include with the plan is Equoc, next village down. But the other consideration that can be made is Kelliganik. If we can combine 3 villages and have 1 major electrical plant to electrify the villages, instead of having 3 separate plants, have 1 to electrify the 3 villages. I think the savings of the fuel and energy would be less. They also had put in wind turbine as a test in a community of Stewiacke. And it's available because of the test that they had done along with that new AVAC plant or power company. What the plan is that they want to put in a wind generation along with the new plant to reduce the cost of a kilowatt. The statement is that the cost of the kilowatt that we're paying wouldn't come in soon, except in like 2-3 years would kick in. The village people in the rural are hurt. We are hurt, to tell you the truth. I never seen so many people at Stuyak, get a lot of wood to supplement the fuel that we're buying for our houses. We're using combination of our wood stove and furnaces to heat our houses. We are hurt. This plan that we worked on to electrify 3 villages, I think it's more feasible instead of having 3 separate generations. If the Alaska Energy Authority, or even with this similar formula, would help the communities in getting funding, it all falls down to the funding. You know, we've been waiting for Denali to give us an okay to get that plan going, but it's still a wait. It's like a wait and see, you know, from the rural villages. We're all ears. When the funding becomes available, we would appreciate that, or even to assist the villages from the legislation, because it's always a need. We are one of the 13, like Robin stated earlier. My village, Stuyak is not part of the CDQ program, but on a corporate level and under education, our corporate entity had established a Chief Ivan Bluka scholarship program for our shareholders and the descendants towards their education to pay their tuition on a local level since 1988 or so. Because we're concerned, I'm concerned of our younger kids, of our younger, the future that's going to be in charge later on. They're going to take my place. So I want them to get their best education too. That's why, as a I'm a board member of corporate entity too. That's why we established that already ahead of time. It was recommended by one of our elder chief, in fact, Chief Ivan Blumka, and we just followed up what he wanted by his direction. Our recommendation. And I forgot to say, I want to thank you for all of you to be here in Bristol Bay region to hear our concerns. We do have a major concerns, especially the fuel, electricity. And I want to thank you all for being here and hearing my words. And it's coming from my heart, what I know. I don't have no black and white to hand you. I'm talking from my heart, what I know. I lived here. I was born here. In fact, I was born here in Dillingham. But I lived most of my life in Stuyak. I served my time in military, too, for 4 years. You know, I served my country. You know, we are all citizens of Alaska. All people in the state of Alaska communities should be serviced equally. When that funding comes available, would you let us know or notify the communities when that stimulus formula comes in place? I know that I heard from that KDLG of mention of $175 million. That may be available sometime soon. Mm-hmm. But for me, I can't really say how to, you know, divide the funding, you know. I don't even know if it's going to come in, or I hope it does, to help the Alaskan villages.
Well, thank you, Peter. Really appreciate your testimony today. Any questions from committee members? Representative Peterson.
And if they aren't, how many miles of transmission lines would have to be built?
Right now, the three of the villages supply their own electrical plant. Each village have their own generation, and there's no electrical lines connected.
So how far apart are they? Do you know
well,
how many?
Well, from Stewiacke to Iqaluk is about 12 miles. Downriver from Stewiacke, and to Kalinic it's about 24 miles straightward, you know, from the, we are like in the middle of the three villages up there.
So you need about 36 miles worth of transmission line, somewhere like that then?
Something like that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Peter, for coming out from the Stewiacke. I really appreciate you making the trip down.
Thank you.
I've been advised by staff that we have a growing list of people who want to testify. We still have a number of organizations that haven't testified. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to start playing a little bit of a time cop here because we have it's about 3 o'clock. I think we can stay here till at least 4:45. That's pushing it. But we have a lot of people, and we want to hear everybody if we possibly can. And so I'm going to ask those that testify from here on out to please try to condense your comments, try to maybe state some points of view that we haven't heard, or to if you can shorten your comments, we'd really appreciate it. That also would allow us some time for a question and answer if possible. I'd like to call Ralph Anderson up to the table, please. Ralph, if you would. And while Ralph is walking up, we once again would like to say thank you very much for the food that was prepared by SAFE and for the fish donated by Nunupta Luxtai, and then arrangements by the Dillingham High School Choir and Ricky Lind. All you guys, thank you very much. You've done an outstanding job today. Welcome, Ralph.
Oh, thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Ralph Anderson. I'm the Chief Executive Officer at the Bristol Bay Native Association. Welcome to all of you, and thank you to the co-chairs for bringing the committee to the people of Dillingham and Bristol Bay. I hope you're finding your stay educational and informative and enjoyable. BBNA is a nonprofit corporation of 31 tribes organized under state law. Our region is about the size, or is about 40,000 square miles, or about the size of the state of Ohio. We provide a wide range of public assistance, education, social, economic, community, natural resource, and land management services to tribes through funding agreements with the state of Alaska and federal agencies. I'm also chairman of the Bristol Bay Partnership, composed of the chief executives of our regional organizations. I'm co-chair of AFN's Human Resources Committee, a committee of the AFN board composed of the chief executives of the 12 nonprofit Native associations. I'm also chairman of AFN's Energy Working Group. All of these organizations share one common goal. We want to find or help to find answers to lowering energy costs in our region and in rural Alaska. During your visits around the state to Alekagik and here to Dillingham, you've seen firsthand some of the innovative ways residents are dealing with high energy costs. You've also heard some of the negative impacts we face because of high costs of energy. There are not too many differences in the stories or in our experiences, and I hope it's clear to you that we need help now. While fuel prices may drop, as we hope they will when the spring barges arrive, we need to be prepared to make sure our suffering doesn't happen again. We need actions from the lessons of this experience to safeguard us in the future. We at BBNA do our best to improve conditions, but are consistently faced with shrinking or limited budgets and rising costs. We also realize that the challenges of finding answers to problems caused by high energy costs are too big for one organization to handle. So our regional organizations are working together to find answers. Rural economies are in dire straits, with unemployment rates in some villages at 80% or more. Our economies and cost of living are tied directly to the price of fuel, the price of electricity, groceries, fresh milk, a dozen eggs, airline tickets, medicine, diapers, clothes, building materials, car and truck parts, everything have all gone up with the price of fuel. Last summer, our commercial fishermen took home less money than they would have if the price had been lower. And it costs even more for us now to subsistence hunt and fish to put food on our tables. The special session last summer gave us some hope, but the final results fell short of meeting our needs and our expectations. Funding for PCE was very helpful. Raising municipal taxes on fuel products resulted in some savings at the pump. $1,200 was good, but it didn't go very far. It bought about 200 gallons of heating fuel here in Dillingham and didn't do anything to lower energy costs or the cost of fuel. We have hope and expectations that your travels and your hearings will result in meaningful actions that will help us. We encourage the state to adopt an energy policy, one that covers every region of the state, with the goal of lowering or equalizing energy costs for all Alaskans. It should contain a specific plan with milestones to measure progress and provide for accountability. We need more than just an index listing potential renewable or alternative energy sources close to our villages. It's a good start. We need a policy directive, and more importantly, a commitment of funds to help develop those potential energy sources. We encourage the state to help us as we transition to alternative or renewable sources by supporting the cost for that transition period. In Bristol Bay, we have geothermal, solar, wood, wind, tidal, and hydro resources that can be developed. Some of our residents and villages have taken the initiative to develop some of them to reduce our costs. And our utility companies are trying to secure funds to develop others on a larger scale. Economies of scale tell us that power grids between our villages will reduce the cost of power production. Lately, we've heard about the governor's proposal for a rail belt power grid. Why is rural Alaska being left out? We're hit the hardest by high energy costs. We don't have the luxury of natural gas fields or a natural gas pipeline planned nearby to power any of our generators. We support buying down the debt of rural utilities to reduce the cost passed on to consumers. Some of our village members are still paying high electric costs for improvements to their power plants and systems, even when the improvements were supposed to reduce the cost. We support strengthening the PCE program by raising the ceiling and adding more money to allow for expanded coverage for schools, health facilities, stores and businesses, and community buildings. We support continuing to fully fund the state's portion of the LIHEAP program and continuing funding of the Alaska Heating Assistance Program. After a U.S. Senate Indian Affairs Committee hearing in Bethel last fall, Senator Lisa Murkowski added $30 million to the federal share of the LIHEAP program. We hope the state would do the same. We support continuing the weatherization and home energy rebate programs under AHFC. There's an increasing demand to make our homes, schools, and buildings more energy efficient and therefore lower our fuel bills. It may be costly to bring them up to code and increase efficiency, but the investment pays dividends in the long run. We support Senator Lyman Hoffman's efforts to cap fuel costs for rural Alaskans and to deliver 100 gallons of fuel to rural households. In Senator Lisa Murkowski's address to the joint session recently, I recall her saying how disappointing it is that rural Alaskans have to rely on a foreign government, Venezuela, for help. We agree that our leaders should do way better than that, especially in an oil-producing state and with the state that receives a royalty share and with two refineries. Finally, we support fully funding the Bulk Fuel Revolving Loan Fund and encourage the governor and legislature to accept all federal economic stimulus funds for Alaska, especially for energy projects in the LIHEAP program. I'd like to explain or describe some of BB&A's work relating to energy. We plan to operate the LIHEAP program under contract during the next state fiscal year. We want to make sure that every eligible resident in Bristol Bay gets the help they need and qualify for under the program. Our tribal TANF program educates, assists, and encourages clients to incorporate energy efficiency measures into their homes, such as installing CFL light bulbs, as a way to help clients meet their household budgets. We also work with the Alaska Intertribal Council and coordinate delivery of 100 gallons of free heating fuel to those in Bristol Bay who want to participate in the CITGO program. We're waiting to get the final go-ahead to begin fuel deliveries, which we hope will be very soon. Last fall, VBNA established a new tribal energy program. Generally, the program is charged with assisting and providing information to tribes on energy projects, initiatives, and opportunities. The program funds are limited by our BIA compact, but we are seeking funds now, additional funds for a full program operation on a regional basis. BBNA is united in partnership with other Bristol Bay organizations to address the issue in a coordinated way. Last spring, the Bristol Bay Partnership adopted an energy policy and energy crisis recovery plan that we're now working to implement. The plan describes short, medium, and long-term goals that we hope to achieve to wean us off fossil fuels as our only source of energy. We need your help and funding to reach those goals. Copies of the plan have been provided to you. Finally, I have two recommendations that I hope you'll consider. One, I encourage the committee to hold a hearing about the pricing of the transportation delivery of fuel to Western Alaska. Why do fuel prices fluctuate so widely between coastal communities? Why, for example, are fuel costs higher in Dillingham than they are in Togiak, Bethel, and Nome? And why is South Naknek paying a dollar more than Naknek, which is 300 yards away? I encourage the committee to explore regulation of fuel transportation and delivery to rural Alaska. The RCA regulates the price of transportation and delivery of natural gas to homes and businesses in Anchorage. As I understand it, NSTAR buys natural gas from producers and transports and delivers it to Anchorage consumers at a cost regulated by the RCA. How or why is that any different than Delta Western and Crowley buying gasoline, diesel, propane, and heating fuel from producers and transporting and delivering them to rural consumers? Thank you again for coming to Dillingham and Bristol Bay for the opportunity to testify today. I'll be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you, Ralph. Appreciate your testimony. Any questions, committee members? Not seeing any. Thank you very much for coming forward. And Robert Clark, can you come forward, if you will? And while you're coming to the table, let me just say that the committee has scheduled a hearing on rural fuel pricing, and that date is March 12th. And so you might note the date, and that's also the date, I believe, that the full House will be debating the operating budget. So we're hoping to have a hearing on that date, and again, March 12th. Welcome, Robert.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Dillingham, Bristol Bay. I'm Robert Clark. I'm the president and CEO of the Bristol Bay Area Health Corporation. We operate the hospital here in Dillingham, compound about 6 miles to the south of Dillingham here, end of the road where Dillingham once was. Dillingham moved up to this area here, Snake Point, many years back, and we got kind of left off the outskirts of town now. But we serve 34 villages, a little bit more than the BBNC and BBNA and the others. We serve a couple of villages up in the Chalista region, and, of course, the Lake Iliamna area, which is part of the Anchorage Service Unit. So it's a conglomeration of a couple of different regions, and there's a holdover from the old IHS operations in the area. So it's a pretty big area, as I mentioned, 40,000 square miles. At one point, we had 8,000 people. We're probably closer to 6,000 today, with the outflow of folks into Anchorage over the high cost of energy. We're the biggest year-round provider of services within the region. About a third of our people are in the villages, about 100, and about 300 folks here in Dillingham proper. Only way you get around, except for between here and Dillingham, Nacogdoches King Salmon is flying, very, very costly, and really hampers our operations as of late with the high cost that we have here. We spend about $1 million on patient travel and probably about another $1 million of medevac cost, roughly 10,000 per village pickup and about 20,000 between here and Anchorage on an average of about 100 patients a year for the medevac and quite a bit more for patient travel, largely life and limb, because of the limited capabilities of our village clinics. So each of the villages with 20 or more people have a clinic of health aides that provide services out there as a step down from the hospital. And we also have four community health centers within the region here, one at Togiak, Chignik, Naknek, and Eliamna, two of which are operated by Bristol Bay Area Health Corporation. The corporation spends roughly $28 million in wages within the region, which is our biggest cost. The rest would be in payroll and travel and all. We've had a dramatic increase in the energy costs, about a 43% increase last year over this year in electricity, and about a 88% increase last year over this year for heating fuel. So we're up roughly $1 million in electricity, heating, and, again, patient travel. This has really impacted our services, supplies, meds, all the others, are many of which are in the double digits. We only get about a 1.8 increase from the federal government. We're pretty much flat budgeted with the state of Alaska. Out of our between $40 million budget, counting capital and et cetera, we only get about $3 million from the state in grants. And many of those grants don't pay their indirect and they don't pay their overhead cost support. Many of them are capped, but we nevertheless are very appreciative of those because we operate as a community hospital, even though the facility itself is a Indian Health Service facility. So we're a critical access hospital, much like most of the smaller hospitals around the state of Alaska. We rely a lot on Medicare, Medicaid, and we appreciate the state's effort working that area. My understanding is with the stimulus increase of the federal share, the governor's going to be trimming some $47 million in the state share of Medicaid costs, but we'll be able to reinvest and build up the tribal health providers, which would then allow you 100% federal Medicaid dollars, again, very, very much needed. Unfortunately, our facilities in town don't accept the Medicare, Medicaid, so we're having to, on a limited basis, account for that at the hospital. And in the stimulus package, which we provide input on, we're hoping to receive, and we're not sure if it's going to come to the state, feds, or how exactly, but we're looking for an expansion or outpatient program. We hope to get a CT scanner so we don't have to have so many people going into Anchorage. And again, these are programs that are shovel-ready that we believe we can operate on a recurring basis. Prenatal borders, quarters for pregnant ladies and young children. Water treatment plant. We're not part of the Community of Dillingham Water Sewer Program. Again, we're 6 miles away. New dental clinic, our little, I think you made a quick tour out there, a little 1973 model trailer. It's just not cutting it anymore, and we have huge needs in that area. Electronic health records. In today's day and age, we have to do everything electronically and to communicate between here, Anchorage, and other places that we refer patients to. We need that both for the hospital and our 29 clinics. And video imaging, again, with the inclement weather and the difficulty of getting around, virtual transportation is the best next thing to being there. And we use that quite a bit also. It saves on training, travel, and other types of things. So fuel costs are eating us out of house and home as well as electricity. And we're just having a dickens of a time, all out of our control.
We too are looking at PCE maybe for both the schools, clinics, and the hospitals. A few of our clinics we understand maybe have that. We're not sure why others don't. And I guess there's only one guy who you can never get a hold of him on the phone. You get a hold of a secretary, and that's kind of about it. But we're still persistently trying to find answers to that there. It's also a statewide priority of Alaska Native Health Board and most of the other groups, such as the Hospital Association, Primary Care Association, and others. Renewable energy, again, anything we would agree with looking at. Wind, tidal, solar, geothermal, and again, the nuclear. Hey, you know, we need that. Bring us a submarine and park it on the Kanaknak Beach or something. I don't know, but we believe for 12 cents to 15 cents per kilowatt hour or less, you can provide power, not only to Dillingham, but all the surrounding area. Something the size of probably here by square would just put it in the ground 50 feet or whatever and hook it up, and you're ready to go. And you use it till it's done, send it outside, not in Alaska, get rid of it, and then put another one in. It can be done. Our board says look at any and all of those areas there, and you've heard it from a couple others. So, again, we're really interested in looking at several of those areas. You've heard the cost on the fuel. It not only affects Kanaknak, who's downsized, 18 people so far. We're going to have to probably do some more. Our health plan went up to almost 29%. Another 300,000 were on a first time in 36 years since I helped start our company as a young whippersnapper just out of college back in 73. We're on a planned deficit close to 600,000. So we're pushing $1 million in the hole this year. And the Medicare, Medicaid, third party, all the other stuff just aren't keeping up with it. So if I got a dollar, I shouldn't be spending a dollar and a quarter. I need to ratchet back to a dollar. Otherwise, I'm over budget, and you know what happens to yourselves and the administration on things like that. So things are pretty dire. It's just not here, but it's our 29 clinics who have not enough money, again, because of the high cost of energy. And when several of them got the new clinics, their business plan penciled out. It all worked. But since then, the costs have gone up so high, they have a hard time making ends meet in the village government, the city government, and the boroughs can't really continue to subsidize those programs also. So it puts pressure on us to try to figure out how we make those work. So we're looking at any and all private, state grants, federal grants. We're looking at the stimulus package. We've got the information into the federal government. Just on the big packages I talked about, it, we got almost $29 million, another $7.4 million for what you call MIRAC programs through IHS, and another $1.7 million, trying to make ends meet, trying to cover costs and expand a little bit and not have so much reliance on sending folks to Anchorage but providing the services locally. We believe these jobs can be done in large part by local providers. It might be a stretch if everybody goes to Seattle to try to get the steel, wood, and all the other packages to get them done in the time frames, but a fair piece of them we think can be done in that period of time. Again, our costs are largely uncontrollable based on crude, so we're looking at the possibility of bulk fuel either through a cooperative in town or bulk fuel ourselves, whether we're continue to use the local cooperative or go off on our own. We think it could potentially pencil out getting our own fuel, storing it, and doing a cogen and a wind combination that we could run quite a bit more efficiently what we're currently providing now, stabilizing the cost, saving funding for ourselves and the community. So I provided these type of information to you in writing. I got a lot of information, a lot of ideas that we've been kicking around. I got some real sharp, dynamic people working for me that are pushing the envelope, sometimes frustrating folks. But things are desperate. We got no choice. I put in the packet there, needs of villages, water, sewer, erosion problems, meeting codes, fire truck needs, trying to stabilize the cost, wanting to get their clinics built rather than having the funding run out because they're so old and in need of repair. So we're willing to talk to anybody and everybody. I've provided information from the Primary Care Association because we're a part of them. The Alaska Native Health Board and others have gone down and talked to you folks down in Juneau. We're a part of that team, and we've provided our input through them as well as to the national level. And we just appreciate you coming out, seeing, hearing from us, trying to get a better understanding of how perhaps we could do things better, stretch the money, leverage as best we can. And we can't do it without state help. My frustration is there's too much a reliance, I think, maybe on federal, when the state needs to step up a little more to help, because we serve everybody and we're first citizens of the state. And then some of us also have special benefits, tribal and otherwise, but it's always good to share and leverage, and we try to do that, and more help, again, to make that happen is needed. I too, would echo the deal with the governor. My understanding is all this stuff is a no-brainer to get except for unemployment insurance, and you guys are too darn cheap. So pay that, too, and get that, too, for people that can't make it and can't work. Many of our fishermen don't have work over the winter months, and they have to rely on some of these things there, and it's one way of helping. The resources come from the rural areas. It always appears and seems that the urban areas get more than their just reserves on it, so some equity and adjustment is needed, I think. And if you were to go with the hub areas, that stuff filters out to the villages. If you go to the villages, it may or may not come into the hub. Those vary. But if you were to get 4,000 to 5,000-foot strips in the villages, that's an economic boost. That also helps Medevac and a whole bunch of other areas. And I put in there for your consideration this TSA regs that would really, really provide a problem for all of rural Alaska, and particularly Bristol Bay, and could hamper our fishing season if, in fact, they try to put those into effect this spring here. So you have a letter in there I shared from BBNC, a resolution from Bristol Bay Area Health Corporation on behalf of all our villages, and some miscellaneous information. Time is short, so I'll just cut it at there and to respond to any questions if there are any.
Thank you, Robert. Just quickly for the record, the House, and I believe the Senate as well, did pass a resolution opposing TSA's recommendation, so we're very much aware of that. Any questions, committee members? I'm not seeing any. Thank you very much, Robert, for coming up. Well, we have about an hour left because we have to, I'm just advised, have about 20 minutes to take down the sound equipment and kind of transition out of the room. So I'm going to ask everybody, please, to keep their testimony very limited. We'll also accept our written testimony. So if you can get your comments. As I asked Mayor Carolyn Smith to come to the table, if you would, Carolyn, please. Please keep your comments down to a few salient points because we want to try to get everybody in if possible. So, again, an hour left, and we're beginning to run short of time.
I'll keep my comments really short. First of all, Lechnigik's very lucky because we are joined by Dillingham with a road. That allows us work. It allows us fuel deliveries for the South Shore. But in one way, we're unlucky in that Crowley has said that they are not going to deliver fuel to the North Shore next year, because it's too costly and too difficult for them. So we're unlucky in that regard. And until we get the bridge, you know, the people on the North Shore end up putting 5-gallon buckets in the back of their snowgo sleds and driving around the lake, or paying the very high price in Lechnigik. And thanks, you guys, for coming. It's been really great to have you here. I really appreciate it. One of the things that didn't come out that I heard earlier 2 years ago was that the road to Lechnigik was started in 1959 so that Lake Elva could be developed for hydroelectric power. So it's really interesting that that road went through because of the Dillingham PUD, or Public Utilities Division, in 1959, and we're just now getting to the point of looking at feasibility again for that. We have about $150,000 operating budget in Lechnigik, and our fuel costs are about $36,000 already so far. It's more than twice it was the previous year. We do collect taxes. We collect 5% sales, 5% bed tax. And in from 07 to 08, our tax collection went up 33%, which was really good. The city, ATC, or Lechnigik Tribal Council, and ANL collaborate. We try and have quarterly meetings. We do joint resolutions. We try and work together as a community to get our projects done. I really like the idea of Representative Ravenous discussed maybe of having a regulatory investigation, a regulatory commission looking at standardizing the fuel costs. I don't know how that feels, but there's no relation to me, but Adam Smith in the ancient democracy, capitalism type rules, it doesn't seem to be working. His invisible hand is really invisible here. We don't really have true capitalism in this and competition in this market, doesn't feel like. PCE would be really nice for public entities. I don't know if that's a possibility, but that's all I have to say. Thanks very much again. You have any questions?
Thank you very much, Mayor Smith, and thank you as well for your hospitality this morning. I believe we did have a question, Representative Tuck. Carolyn Smith.
My name is Carolyn Smith, Mayor and Electing Geek.
Thank you very much, Carolyn. Well, I'm going to go through the list here, and again, I would appreciate everybody keeping their testimony as brief as they can. John Corbett, you want to step to the table, please?
Hi, my name is John Corbett. I'm a private citizen. I also run a business here in Dillingham. I want to thank you guys for coming out here, and maybe y'all can kind of see, you know, what kind of issues that we're really dealing with and the crisis situation that we're in. I'll make a couple of quick comments and get out of the way. For me, it's difficult to understand why Alaska as an energy state has become a slave to the other states and their desire for our resources. People in western Alaska are paying $8 a gallon for milk and four or five times for gasoline. These are resources that belong to Alaska and should be used in Alaska. If the rest of the country wants our resources, why can't we have the resources they have? A lot of people have mentioned small-scale nuclear. This is an excellent option to go to. The waste involved is relatively small, and it's plug-and-play technology. Who cares if the federal government wants years and years of regulatory control over the licenses? These, if you look at the list that's in the AEA report, several of these nuclear installations are funded through public education money, universities and such. The UAF and UAA could very easily step into a role like this, set up Arctic research centers to try to help power their own communities. Funding for infrastructure is not change. It's not cheap, and it's not going to be easy. But the Department of Energy has $40 billion in the new stimulus package that has to be spent in the next two or three years. Granted, that money is to be for capital projects and not maintenance, so make the federal government pay for it, and then the state money can go for maintaining projects. Unless something is done soon, the municipalities and state government entities out in rural Alaska are going to begin to decay. Tax revenues are going to drop off as commercial businesses who do not qualify for PC or any other type of assistance are going to have to reduce their operations as well. For example, like what I've had to do in my business is cut everything as bare bones as possible with electrical consumption. We're relying on waste heat energy to heat our building, and along with various building things that we did when we were rebuilding. Excuse me. Essentially, it all boils down to something needs to be done now, and there are solutions that are out there. Flooding the place, flooding any place with money is not a solution. Ramos, is that your name? You know, his idea of saying, you know, how do we control it is very important. The state needs to control it, but they also need to actually step out and take control of the projects. Projects that have been suggested in this area, such as a multi-million-dollar hydro project that is not physically responsible for this area, if you look at how much it would cost in relation to how much you're actually going to get out of it and how long it's going to supposedly take to actually make it a shovel-ready project, when taking a risk and throwing up $10, $15 million worth of wind turbines would do significant to increase not only our hope of surviving this crisis and giving hope for people in the community who cannot make it from week to week or day to day. It will also provide jobs, as the infrastructure here, especially in this community, has to be changed completely. For everything from the power distribution
systems at the plant all the way out to transformers and substations. That's pretty much all I have to say, and I hope that y'all take what y'all hear here, take it back to Juneau, and start trying to figure it out for us.
Thank you, John.
Thanks.
Next, we'll call Russell Nelson. Are you still in the audience? And thank you for waiting patiently.
Yeah, thanks, Bryce. Remember to put the dog on your ethics disclosure form. We don't want you getting into trouble.
I don't think I need to do that. Maybe at home I need to.
thank you. My name is Russell Nelson. I'm the Director of Facilities for the Dillingham City School District, and I'm speaking to you for Darlene Triplett, the Superintendent for the Dillingham City School District. At the school district, we're aware of the energy crisis here in rural Alaska. With over 130,000 square feet of space to heat in three large buildings, it's helped the school district to purchase supplemental heat from Nooshiegat Cooperative for 50% of the cost of a BTU of heat produced by oil. We need more innovative ways to reduce the cost of energy. Mayor Alice Ruby spoke about the bond that was passed by the citizens of this area, Dillingham, to fix up the Dillingham City School District. We're using a lot of that money to make our buildings more energy efficient, and you know, so that's, and the citizens are paying for that. The high cost of electricity must come down. This past September, the city of or the Dillingham City School Board passed Resolution 0905, which I'll just read the very end of it to you. Therefore, it be resolved that Dillingham City School Board is requesting energy relief through the Power Cost Equalization PEC or PCE program for electrical costs incurred by the Dillingham City School District during the school year. That was adopted in September of 08, this last fall. We need short-term help and long-term solutions for the energy crisis in rural Alaska. When heating fuel is over $6 a gallon and electricity is over 47 cents per kilowatt hour, more solutions become viable. The Dillingham City School District needs you to fund the solutions to the high cost of energy so that in rural Alaska we can afford to put more money into our classrooms. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Russell. Appreciate your brevity and not seeing any questions. Thank you once again. Ofi, did you want to come up and testify, if you would, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be brief. Thanks all of you for last night for honoring me with that citation, Mr. Speaker, and Representative Edgeman, Co-Chair Millett, and the rest of you. That was pretty big honor, so thank you. Well, welcome to Bristol Bay. I'm very thankful that you're coming out here. Like I said last night, I think things with the state of Alaska, the government's getting better because you people are coming out to rural Alaska. Wasn't too long ago we had the Fisheries Committee out here, so I'm very proud that's happening. I think you've heard a lot about energy costs in rural Alaska. Dillingham's no exception. We're paying through the nose out here, and it's affecting everybody. One of the things I wouldn't elaborate on that, but it's probably number one priority at high energy costs. I want to say what I said last night about fishing, lost opportunity. You heard the numbers from Robin. I think that would help us here in the Bay Area, and I think it will help all salmon fisheries throughout the state. When prices are up, we're happy. When they're down, we're not so happy. And if we can't harvest what we're supposed to harvest, we're even more in bad shape. So maybe when you get back to Juneau or sometime before the legislature, you can address that, make it a little more easier for foreign processors to come in. I understand it's a whole bunch of red tape now. I guess it's between the governor and you people to make that decision. So with that, again, thank you for coming to Dillingham, Bristol Bay Area, and I'm very proud of all of you for listening to the public here and all the neighbors that are sitting behind me. Thank you.
Thank you. If I maybe I can get you to state your name for the record.
Elmer Olson, residing in Dillingham, Alaska.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You.
Not seeing any questions. Appreciate it, Ofi.
Okay.
Karen Dearlove. Karen, are you still in the audience? Karen, thank you for allowing us to stop by earlier today and see your wood stove.
It was absolutely my pleasure, Mr. Chairman, Madam Co-Chair. Legislators, first off, I'd like to thank you for coming to Dillingham. And secondly, I certainly want to thank you on behalf of the citizens of Alaska for your public service. I do have written comments I'll hand out so I can actually keep my comments quite brief. The I also want to thank you for having John Anderson come out with Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. We had a very enlightening conversation, and I look forward to be working with the staff of the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation as well. I've been here in Alaska since 2005, and in fact, it took two times for us to get the relocation done. My husband, Tom Dearlove, and I, we've now been here in Dillingham since September of 2007, and we're a proud tax-paying first-class city residents out here. And I do want to encourage the legislature, when you're looking at the prioritization of funds for energy projects, that in fact you do look at the tax burden being paid by first-class cities, those that are trying to help themselves, and certainly to prioritize to help those that are helping themselves. Look at our tax burden here as a first-class city and the promises that are no longer kept by the state when the incentives were in place, in fact, for cities to incorporate as first-class versus second-class cities. My written comments will cover the weatherization program and what I see as a necessary evolution and acceleration of those monies, material rebate programs, et cetera. The other key thing I also wanted to bring up and further emphasize the remarks by John Corbett is small businesses in rural Alaska are not benefiting of the power cost equalization. They're paying the full tax burden. And so where there are opportunities for the state to partner with organizations, in particular UAF, Bristol Bay Campus, to implement programs, pilot programs, working with small businesses, that rural Alaska, Western Alaska, can see some pilot projects in renewable energy systems to test them here. Coal Climate Housing Research Center in Fairbanks is excellent, and it's certainly excellent and within the reach of those on the road system. But when it comes to actually showing in remote rural Alaska what's working, I would strongly encourage to look for the opportunity to partner with the Bristol Bay Campus. Assistant Professor Tom Marsick that's going to be out here on staff in the Sustainable Energy Program starting this summer, and opportunities that they're looking to implement in further working in energy issues here in Dillingham and Bristol Bay. So with that, I will conclude my remarks, and I can also state I've already emailed these to Adam West, one of the staffers.
Okay. Thank you very much, Karen. Representative Herron.
Madam Chair, Karen, appreciate your hospitality this morning. It was most impressive to go to your home. I guess you've emphasized, like many of others, that people need PCE help for schools and small businesses. But my question to you is that USDA, in my experience, is not very nimble. Are you optimistic with the new state director?
I'm here before this committee as a taxpaying citizen of the state of Alaska, and I can remark that I'm not here speaking on behalf of the Dillingham Area Office nor the agency for which I work. However, I can tell you that the Director of Business Programs appreciates my right brain and creative implementation of federal programs to the greatest benefit. That being said, there are two planning programs of USDA rural development that can be brought to bear for small business benefit, and I'm working with statewide nonprofits as well as regional nonprofits and the university campus to, in fact, bring those to bear in our service area, not only Bristol Bay, but also the Aleutian Chain and the Pribilof Islands.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair. I think I echo the thing of a lot of people that work in the legislature. We wish that USDA was more nimble.
Well, we got that on the record. Karen, thank you very much for coming forward.
Thank you.
Representative Herron, good point. Bob Hemshoot, do you want to come forward and testify, if you would, please? And while he's walking to the table, we also want to thank him very much for sharing his home and his wind turbines and certainly driving the bus van for the last day and a half or so. Bob, we really appreciate your time.
Thank you, and thank you for coming to Dillingham. As everyone else has expressed, it's nice to have access. A lot of my concerns have already been very well explained by other people in their testimony. I would like to follow up Karen's remarks on the weatherization and the rebate program. And the proof of performance necessary and the way it does not work well in rural Alaska. As you've seen today, hopefully, we are fairly self-sufficient in the way that we operate our homes out here, that most of the innovations that happen at our house, most of the remodel, the energy efficiency work is done by the homeowner. In the brochures from for the rebate program, that is acknowledged that homeowners can do their own labor. I would suggest that a proof of performance that doesn't require a pre-audit, maybe just a post or maybe just an explanation of what was done with digital photographs of before and after would suffice for rural Alaska and would get the money out to the rural Alaskans and in their homes. We've put ourselves in a situation now this last year where a lot of us that are not going to qualify for weatherization that are looking at the rebate program for help have to choose between whether we put the money into our homes now and therefore establish a larger base point level and a smaller rebate, or we wait till we can get the initial blower door test and Alaska Warm designation on the home and the points ratings and try to increase that margin, get a larger rebate. We're too late for this winter. I understand there are some things in the works that will allow more energy auditors in the area. I still don't believe that those are necessary out here, that we can effectively use that money now. Mr. Ramos asked a question of Robin earlier as to how a given pool of money should be distributed and what criteria. And although I cannot sit here and tell you all the criteria you should look at, insofar as that pool of money is an investment by the state of Alaska, the largest return on that money is going to be the place that does the most good and mitigates the most costs. And I believe that is rural Alaska. I think that should be considered when you're looking at funding for things like the rebate program and for the alternative energy fund.
Thank you, Bob. Good suggestions about the housing program. Let me just say before we go to Representative Herron that John Anderson, who's here with HSC, told me to relay to everyone that he plans to be in Dillingham until Tuesday at noon. And you can contact him through the Bristol Housing Authority, 842-5956, I believe the number is. So he'll be here until Tuesday at noon with the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. Representative Herron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bob, appreciate your hospitality the last couple of days. Mr. Council Member, I guess I'm impressed. Of course, we've known each other a long time. You used to live in Bethel. But I thought it took 50 years to get elected to council in this town.
Yeah. Your comments, sir?
I appreciate that. For whatever it's worth, it was somewhat less than 50 years, but hopefully it was the right decision.
Well, thank you very much, Bob. Not seeing any other comments or questions, and appreciate your time this weekend. Gusty Chytluk, Representative, let's get this on the record. Just if you could, Mr. Hemshute, respond to Representative Tuck's question, and please restate that for the record.
I didn't get a chance to ask it earlier on our tour, but what's the power generation of each of your turbines?
They're 2.4 kilowatts max, a total of 4.8.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'm sorry.
Thank you very much. Gusty, do you want to come forward, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and the other members. I'm Gusty Chytluk. I'm a lifetime resident of Bristol Bay, born and raised in Togiak, and live in Alaknagik, Alaska currently. My concern is our ever-rising cost of our energy. I know back about 44 years ago, we were paying about 50 cents a gallon for gas at our service stations. Currently, I didn't think we'd be paying $6.31 a gallon for the same gallon of fuel. What I would like to know from legislature, if there's any other alternative energy, because the same oil also is about just as high or higher than a gallon of gas now. So we're not like privileged like Cook Inlet area, where they had a long term of low-cost natural gas for over 50 years. If there's a way, if our Bristol Bay can have access or be privileged to be connected to take part of that 454 billion cubic feet of natural gas, I would be more than happy to be able to be part of it. Thank you. That's all I have to say.
Thank you very much, Gusty. Not seeing any questions. Really appreciate you coming forward. Next, we'd like to call Marilyn Rosine to the table. Hi,
hello. My name is Marilyn Rosine, and I'm a resident parent and educator since 1982 in Dillingham. Currently have the privilege of being the principal of this school, so I'd like to welcome you to Dillingham Elementary. And some of what I wanted to say just is as a resident, this building will get a new roof next summer, and we're hoping that will help with the energy costs here. And in 2010, we hope to get new windows and doors, and I can tell right now that the door to the entryway is open because many of our homes are like a sieve, just like the entryway where the cold comes in. And my idea is just kind of a brass tacks. I get to the details and get the job done. I think that the power cost equalization is a good discussion. Cost of fuel is a good discussion. But I think we need like a SWAT team to come in here, go to all the buildings, apartments, houses, and find out where the heat's leaking out, what we can do about it, bring in duct tape, insulation, caulking, whatever, and help people help their homes and apartments. All of that results in costs out of pocket for people in the business of education. That's a huge reason why it's hard for people to stay employed in the Dillingham City School District, because it costs so much for rent and for employers such as ourselves to train people and have kids come back. We love that, but the reality is that we can't grow enough of our own right now. So my idea is just to use some of that money that would come to the community and train our people to do the testing of the homes and buildings and get the job done. And again, I thank you for the time you take away from your families and other interests to come to Dillingham. So thank you. And any questions?
I don't see any questions. Thank you for testifying today, Marilyn. Next, I would like to call June Ingram to the table, if you're still here, June. And we also thank you for being patient. And
good afternoon. My name is June Ingram. I'm from Dillingham, Clark's Point, and Eacock. I represent myself and my family and as a voter. And I thank you for coming to Dillingham, and you're doing a good job. And I hope my prayers will be with you in these months coming up. I represent my family. My husband and I'm a fisherwoman, and my husband is a fisherman. We put that foremost in our life. It's our way of life. And to supplement our fishing income, we both have winter jobs. For the last 5 months, and I know this is from a
90% of the people in Bristol Bay that I'm speaking for, which we all share the same thing. We, during the cold spell, our fuel for 1 month was 164 gallons. Times that by six. That's not including the gas, which is $6 a gallon, to and from work, to the store, to the post office. That's all we do. Yet we are, and I consider myself a middle-class family. We're not poor, but this, the cost of fuel is making us poor. I could remember better days, and we just like the people up in Bethel, we have to make a choice. Should we buy our dog food, or should we buy gas? And it's the same thing towards the end of the month. I am asking for your help for our region. I notice I'm not representing BBHC, but I work for them. And I work with the 34 villages in the area from October 2007 to 2008. 1,000 people left Bristol Bay. 2 months ago, and Perryville down the chain has approximately 57 villagers. 18 left that village for Anchorage. We got a call from Nundalton. In 1 month's time, 48 people left. So that is a problem. It is a big problem here in the Bay Area, and in all of Alaska, I would say. I am asking you, our representatives that we voted for, please help the rural area. And I thank you for your time, and you'll be in my prayers. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, June. Any questions? Not seeing any. Next, we'd like to have Kyle Black come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Madam Chairman, and committee. I didn't realize, forgot this was going on. I was on my way out the door to enjoy the day and heard you all on the radio, so I wanted to come down. I believe every crisis is an excellent opportunity for change. I also believe that our energy crisis is largely a housing crisis. Our houses throughout the state were built on dollar oil. They are not designed to handle the cost of oil right now. Here's what I propose. I think that the state of Alaska should design a program similar to the HUD Section 184 program, specifically allowing for owner construction. I think that the state of Alaska, with all its various savings accounts, I mean, things might be tight, but let's be realistic. We got money in the bank. I think that we should use some of that money to back loans, guarantee loans, so that young families wanting to build in anywhere in Alaska, but particularly in rural Alaska, can get the funds they need to build their own homes. The problem is that whenever the state comes up with a program, we need inspectors, we need all these hoops to jump through, and clearly those hoops are very challenging for us. And I think that the state of Alaska, with its resource, can design some programs so that we all can take care of ourselves. And that's ultimately the way these issues are going to be solved. It's hardworking folks, innovative folks, doing what's right for them and their families. And I think a program like that might cost the state next to nothing and have incredible benefits for our families. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Kyle. Any questions? Not seeing any. Appreciate your testimony and your suggestions. Next, I would like to go to Lucy Weedman. Are you here in the audience? And I'll remind everyone that we are getting very short on time here. Got about 35 minutes, and then we're going to basically close the committee down so that we can make the airplane out of town tonight. Lucy, welcome, and if you would state your name, please, and offer your comments.
Okay, my name is Lucy Weedman. I've been a resident of Dillingham for 5 months tomorrow. I wanted to testify because This fall, I talked my family into moving to Dillingham so that we could find employment. And like I said, tomorrow will be 5 months we're down here. I work for BBNA, the Tribal Tonic Program. And since I've gotten into the workforce about 27 years, I've never had to apply for assistance. Some family and friends talked me into applying for assistance, and I'm sorry. I'm just thinking about my son. I have a 9-year-old son. The high price of oil, the high cost of energy really put a strain on me and my family, because I'm the only one recently who only had the income. And last week, I was forced to call on family and friends, to help me buy oil, because I didn't have the money. The payday was in 2 days. I sat there and thought about, how am I going to keep my son warm? I had a choice: keep my family warm and not buy the food. I had applied for energy assistance, but I was denied because I'm only $100-something over the income limit. And the price of gas to take my son to a sitter when there's no school, and to get to and from work, it's about the same price as the heating oil. So I had a choice: keep the house warm and go without the necessities that everybody, we want all our kids to have this and that. 2 weeks ago, I thought about giving up, packing up, going home. My family and friends talked me out of it. I told my coworkers it's easier to just go home and live off welfare. But I've never done that. My family and I have always been providing, and this is the first time I've ever had to ask for assistance and was denied just by $100-something. And the program I work for, I work for BBNA, the Tribal Tonic Program, and another lady and I determine eligibility, and we work really close with each other, along with the caseworkers. And I have some letters from some of the people that are my clients, and they wanted us to bring you guys these letters, letting you know what kind of life, or how hard it is in the villages. And that's what's keeping me going, too. I don't have it as hard as these guys. But somebody mentioned earlier the middle class, who's never had to apply for assistance before, I think are taking it harder than most of the people that are already getting assistance. But thank you for listening.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments, too, Lucy. Make sure my staff, Adam Berg, gets your written comments, and appreciate you coming forward and having the courage to testify. Thank you. Next, we would like to go to Mark Newson. Mark, if you could state your name and your affiliation, please.
Hello, my name is Mark Newson. I'm a resident here in Dillingham, have been so for 2 years. I speak to you on behalf of being a resident, and since I've been here, as a nature of my job, I do a great deal of research, in the areas of development. And I've been greatly troubled and concerned with some of the issues that have risen by the energy cost. And what I've found is the high cost of energy has greatly impacted the community in three areas, one of which our transportation The other are our ability to gain independence from energy or renewable energy. And lastly, it's impacted our industries here. And as you've heard it over and over again, that seems to have been something that has literally crippled many of the people in this community, and people don't complain here. I do hear a lot about people, families moving in with one another. I hear a lot about people not being able to afford to, the transportation to go into Anchorage for health care. And after doing research, I'm finding out that Bristol Bay has the highest rate of malignant neoplasms, where people are dying of cancer, and it's not just because they don't have adequate health care in the state of Alaska. It's because they can't afford the transportation and because we don't have access to health care here in the Bristol Bay Area community. And so, you know, what I'd like to urge the distinguished legislators here today is to think about what we can do together to come up with a solution to help us gain that access to health care here in the Bristol Bay area. And also a question, or an answer to your question that you had answered or asked earlier with regard to what would we have done with that money. My answer would, or my reply would be to invest that into our infrastructure, into our intertie. I believe NACNIC had a proposal that had identified the cost of intertie, and in some discussions with some of the people over at Bristol Bay Native Corporation, I believe that price tag would be about $200 million for a Bristol Bay area intertie. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments, Mark. Next, I'd like to call Kim Williams. Kim, are you still here? Is Kim Williams still here? We're running down the last of our list here and asking everyone to please be brief, and we apologize for the time constraints, but we do have them about a half an hour or less.
Thank you, Bryce. My name is Kimberly Williams, and I'm born and raised here in Dillingham, and one of those that left, got an education and came back. And to me, it's heart-wrenching to hear Lucy, who's a classmate of yours and mine when we were going to school here in Dillingham. I'm very involved in our community. I'm elected to our Chilung Tribal Council. You heard Tommy speak. I'm also elected on the school board. I sit on the Bristol Bay Area Health Corporation Executive Committee. To me, we all have an obligation that when we are get an education, when we come home, we serve our community. I'm here speaking. I have that broad range of involvement, but I'm here as a community member of Dillingham. Our tribe received money from BBEDC, and I don't know if Robin talked to you guys last night about it, to provide energy assistance to families or electricity assistance to families. We opened up the application period in 3.5 days. We had 90 applicants to get $700 of a rebate for electricity assistance. We went over the amount that we were funded from BBEDC, and we followed the poverty guidelines. 3.5 days, 90 applicants in Dillingham. Our school district provides free meals to families, to children in our district, 69.7%. of our children in our district qualify for a free meal for breakfast and lunch. This weekend we had a middle school basketball tournament here, and I happen to have a child in middle school. We had over 100 kids from around this region come here who had to raise money to come for basketball, pay the high cost for air travel, and they all had cake walks and bake sales. Over 100 kids 2.5 days, and we, the parents of Dillingham, fed them because we couldn't afford the $5 a meal per kid to run it through our school district. We would have to fundraise that. The energy for our school district in our 2010 budget, which we are still in the middle of developing that 2010 budget, we're spending almost $500,000 in our budget for heating and electricity. And you heard Russell talk about waste heat. That is money taken away from our kids and their instruction. And we're looking at cutting teachers. It is unheard of. And I guess I ask you, whatever you do, there has to be short-term solutions immediately. And I think we've become, I don't want to say that, at least in my family, I've given up stuff. I've parked the second car. I don't buy the Bristol Express Americano anymore. That saves me $1,000 a year. But that's a small business in our community that loses that revenue. Thank you, Ricky. So to me, I guess I can't urge you enough to do something immediately. Our family is building a house. We live on a native allotment that my father has inherited from his mother. We can't go to the bank. It's the red tape to get stuff through a native allotment in the Bureau of Indian Affairs. It takes forever. We have been building on a house for 7 years. We do it out of pocket. Those are the choices we make to live here because Dillingham is home. And to me, I guess I just urge you to do something and do something immediately. Thank you.
Kim, thank you. Excellent comments. Appreciate your testimony. Next, we'd like to go to Joe Faith. Joe, would you please come up? And I would say on behalf of the committee, we sure appreciate all the good testimony. And at this point, as we wind down the meeting,
I'm Joe Faith from Dillingham. Hydropower has potential in Bristol Bay. Bristol Bay has the third largest tides in the world. It seems to me that the small barge power generating systems being tried up on the Yukon Rivers could work here. Wind power also has potential here. Wind levels are likely similar to those in the villages of Tuxuk Bay, Kotzebue, and Pilot Point, which actually is in Bristol Bay, where wind generators are being used. The Bristol Bay Area Health Corporation is seriously working on a wind project for here in Dillingham. I would also like to see North Slope oil and any natural gas and any byproduct propane be brought to a fuel station on the Yukon River and then barged down the Yukon River to Western Alaska. It makes little sense that oil is being shipped 3,000 miles down to the lower 48 and then shipped back to Western Alaska. With respect to oil development, I do support onshore oil development for various reasons. I do not support offshore oil development. All the fisheries of the Bering Sea are worth roughly $1 billion a year. When you balance that in with offshore oil development in Bristol Bay, it just doesn't seem to me to be worth the risk of a $1 billion industry that is sustainable on a year-to-year basis. Additionally, President Obama has made renewable energy an important point of his plan to help restore the economy of the nation. Alaska certainly has a different economy, but I would ask that the legislature help support President Obama and make renewable energy an important point in our state as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Joe. Jimmy Hurley, are you still there, Jimmy? Jimmy, did you want to testify?
Yeah, my name is Jimmy Early. I'm representing myself. I've,
I've had a lot of hats in my life, and I wore a lot of hats, but I want to stress that, you know, this fall we do our moose hunting, and we've had to team up to survive. You know, gas costs too much that you have to go with somebody else, and, you know, you go and get a moose, you know, but a lot of people didn't get any, you know, but it's pretty tough to live in a little community where you don't have no infrastructure. You know, you have different ideas, and, you know, it's we're fortunate we belong with BBDC, and I've been working on doing value added with our fish. Bristol Bay has the number one thing in Bristol Bay is fish. So we got to utilize what we have. And salmon are here, and, you know, and on long term, you know, I can't stop talking about the value added part. Our salmon goes to China, and, you know, where does that money go? To China. Why can't it go to all these villages? You know, we have 17 villages in BBDC, 32 in the whole area. So, you know, it's fisheries related. And I'm really happy to see that Robin is pushing for some plants in some of the smaller communities. You know, Robin and Todd and Charlene, they've done a real good job, you know, promoting jobs in the community. So, I mean, we need jobs. If not, we're going to be moving into acreage too, you know. So, and I don't want to see that. I've lived all my life in Ekwok, you know. And I went out and educated a little bit, but you know, it's hard to see other people. A lot of my family have moved to Anchorage, you know. So it's tough to say that. Oh yeah, you know, you're the strong one. No, but you know, it's just like the lady saying earlier. You know, it's tough to, you know, when you don't have too much money for other things. You know, you got to buy, you know, gas and got a supplement, you know, and but I want to say thanks to all you who are here. You know, I really appreciate you guys coming to Bristol Bay.
Thank you, Jimmy, and appreciate you coming down from Ekwok to testify. Not seeing any questions. We'll move on to Don Ford.
Hello, representatives. Glad to see you here this afternoon. I was just in Juneau last week. Saw most of you. I don't know if you remember me. I have to say, and I think I can speak for most, hopefully speak for the most of the community, you look a lot better here than you do in Juneau. You even look younger. Feel free to come back anytime. Glad to have you. I'm Don Ford from Dillingham. I've lived here 20 years. I'm nobody. I'm a caring community member. And my hope is to be able to afford to die here also. Right now, that's debatable. Speaking of which, I'd like you to know I'm shovel ready. I'm willing to accept any stimulus dollars we can get. And I was serious, but on a more serious note, I think a short-term help would be to have PCE available to our businesses, our stores and so forth, to help lower prices. They're paying a tremendous amount for electricity. Also for our schools and hospital and other entities here that are so necessary to our existence here. They could greatly benefit from PCE being extended to them also. And that's in the short term. What we really need is long-term solutions, whether it be Lake Elba, wind generation, all the solutions suggested here today, a combination of all of them. We really need to look at long term. And I would like to see great need of short term solutions. The $1,200 last year was greatly appreciated, but we really need long term solutions. I'm what I consider middle income. The poverty level people here, which is up to 80% of the people here, have been hurting for years. I just want you to know also that middle-income people are really hurting now. And I see more of my friends and acquaintances leaving all the time. And not by choice. So I'm really asking for your help. We're all hurting. I'd like to touch on the weatherization quickly. We have a home that's 15 years old, built by a contractor, considered good construction here, but like's been said before, it's built for when fuel was a dollar a gallon. But frankly, I can't afford upfront money for the weatherization project in which we're reimbursed. I'm paying the equivalent of 3 or 4 months a year, I'm paying the equivalent of our mortgage for just to keep our home heated. And all of our expendable money goes into that. We can't even begin to think about new windows that are needed or better insulation. Even if we were to be reimbursed for it, we just don't have the money up front at this time. And that would be a good long-term saving for us, as well as alternative energy. And I ask you to look at that and some solutions there. I won't go into details. Others have. I'd just like to thank you and remind you that y'all are looking very good here.
Thank you very much, Don. And you had the line of the day. I think we're all shovel ready. Representative Heron.
Sure.
Appreciate you stopped by the office the other day, and I think you brought up a good point that's been reiterated over and over, is that things, whether it's your home or whether it's guidelines for assistance to people in need, it's all based on a dollar oil.
Thank you very much, Don, for coming forward. Again, sort of racing against the clock here. We've got, I'm going to say, about 10 minutes left, unfortunately. I've got four people left to testify, so if you could come up, Frank Woods, and please just give us some quick main points and get your name on the record, and we'll certainly take any written testimony you might have. But
I'll keep it short. Frank Woods, resident of Dillingham. I thank you for showing up. Points I'd like to point out is Alaska is an urban state, and majority of the population in Alaska lives in urban centers around the state. But rural Alaska is a breadwinner for the budget of Alaska and operating and the infrastructure that happens through tourism, fisheries, oil and gas, development, and minerals, that we don't have enough manpower and resources and money and infrastructure to manage our existing not only lands, but the planned use of lands. And this is all happening within urban Alaska. The majority of decisions that get made for rural Alaska is happening in Juneau, Anchorage, Fairbanks, and the rail belt. I see too many boards representation from those regions instead of a lobby to you and everybody else, I guess, is during these hard times, it's time to engage. And as you see the turnout here, it's time for us to start acting and getting involved in all this that's happening. In Bristol Bay alone, you know, there's only, 8,000 people maximum. Now there's probably about 6,000 with the exodus from rural to urban. That we don't have enough manpower and money to manage our existing resources, let alone any more development. And I'd like to, you know, think about 20 years from now, when oil starts running out, when the world surplus isn't going to be there, that my grandkids aren't going to have, we're going to be facing this again. So every dollar you spend now is going to be worth $1,000 20 years from now. And then thank you for including rural Alaska in this, and I really appreciate you coming up and sharing your time. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Frank, for keeping that quick as well. Pastor Wendell Downs.
Thank you.
My name is Wendell Downs, pastor of the Seventh-day Adventist Church here in Dillingham. By the way, I really appreciate seeing you in person. I've watched you on TV many times, but I really appreciate it here in person. So, I've been a pastor in Dillingham just 2 years. I first came as a fisherman here in 1967, so I go back quite a ways. I've pastored all over the state, and so I have a feel for what is happening not just here, and I think the pain is felt everywhere. It all spells it out in different ways. The Valley, Wasilla, you lived there most recently, and people that are commuting there were hurting just as bad as we were, but in their own ways, I realize that. I would like, just in briefness of time, to suggest a short-term solution, because that's what we're looking at right now, and that is to create legislation that would actually subsidize the cost at the pump, to place the state in a position of being the negotiator with the different suppliers. And I realize that when we're talking about cost, supply and demand and so forth, if you cap the price, then in some ways you actually may limit the supply, which could cause a real problem out here, because suppliers may just decide not to deliver. But if we subsidize back to them and let the state actually negotiate the prices, if it's too high, tell them to knock it down, or if it's acceptable to do that. And this would help the rail belt communities as well as the residents of Bristol Bay or Kotzebue. It would place the state in the position where they could actually work with some of the other questions that we as individuals cannot deal with, such as supply and demand. I believe it would stimulate the economy all over the state by allowing businesses to plan for stabilized prices. It would also benefit private, nonprofit entities such as churches and others who really have no other means other than people giving, and for them to be able to do what they need to do too. Right as it stands, I would rather that we, rather than the state share the wealth generated from the oil, I'd actually like that they would just send us the oil. We could use that pretty good right now. Thank you.
Some very good comments. Thank you. Very quickly here, Brian Pauling. And again, we're running out of time. We apologize profusely for that, but anything we can't get verbally from you here today, we'd certainly like to get in writing. And Brian, if you could state your name and your affiliation, please.
I'm Brian Pauling. I'm a resident here, have been since 2000. I'm also a small business owner here. I've got multiple streams of income that I utilize out here because I have an entrepreneurial spirit. Unfortunately, I'm guilty of spending about $12,000 since November 1st on fuel out here that I'm shipping that money out of this economic area. And that's just me. There's a lot of other people, a lot more that's going out of here that we aren't seeing roll over in our communities. We've got to stop that. We need to start spending some money on renewable energy. I've got some written testimony here I wanted to put into the record.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, I can't go through all of it. So to hit the highlights, we need to invest in our local college to train our local people on what renewable energies are out there, what resources they can use, whether it's available in wind, solar, geothermal, hydro, whatever we have available to us, biomass, wood boiler. Myself, I'm going to put a wood boiler in this next year, like you saw earlier done. I'm looking to see if I can put up wind turbines to be able to offset some of my other additional costs so I can keep part of that money in my community here. As long as people can afford to pay me for my services, I can continue to live here. But as soon as they can't afford to support my $12,000 habit, I can't be here either. So we need to invest in our local communities, our local college, and get programs in place to teach our people how to put in resources that they can save their own money and keep that money in the community. There's no point in bringing in outside technologies when we don't have any people here that are up to speed on how to maintain that and work with that. So fund our college programs. The local college just recently put on an electric car. I believe you guys saw the electric car program. They also put on a biodiesel. I'm thankful. I attended both those. I'm thankful that they were available out here. I need to see more of it, or would like to. I haven't heard enough about the education day. You've all heard the horror stories of what people are going through, and I feel sorry for most of them. I wish we could do better. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. I appreciate you condensing your testimony. Stan Small. Stan, are you still out there? Stan is gone. Julianne Baltar, did you wish to testify? not, that completes our testimony for the day. We, in closing, want to thank all of the staff who helped make this meeting possible. Adam Berg, who's my staff, many of you know him, Renee Limoges, Sonia Christensen, Tim Powers, and Ken Ballinger put up the sound system. We thank all of you. To you, the community members, to anyone out listening in the KDLG land, we've still got about, I'm guessing, 60 or 70 people here in the audience. That's incredible staying power. It's on a topic that's obviously vitally important to all of us. To the Speaker of the House, Mr. Speaker, for allowing us, and Co-Chair Millett for making this trip possible. We appreciate it very much. Committee members, thank you for taking time out of your weekend. For all of you who testified or attend the meeting, thank you as well. And we urge you to keep in contact with the committee, with the legislature. Keep doing things here at the community level, because we all know government is part of the solution, but it's not the entire solution. We'll keep up the good fight. And with that, we'll adjourn the Special Committee on Energy at 4:30. Thank you.